sœur. Ma sœur est plus grande que moi et a les yeux verts.
I know you won't need any help. I live with my parents. I have a brother and sister. My sister is taller than me and her eyes are green. How important have languages been for you? Plus... Now they want to ban trail hunting in another blow to the countryside. And also those house-building targets, Build, Baby Build, appears to be in tatters. Those stories and more after the news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, ministers are reportedly considering following Australia in banning social media for under-16s. Canberra brought in the law earlier this month, which applies to platforms including Facebook and X. A government spokesman's told LBC that nothing is off the table to keep children safe online. But children's rights expert Naomi Lott says a ban could push young people to unregulated parts of the internet.
What we really need is tech companies to be better held to account for the impacts of their algorithms. And we need legislation that limits what these platforms can promote. It does seem like the easy way out for Australia to say, well, we'll just remove children from these spaces, instead of saying, actually, these are the really firm legislation and governance around what these companies can do and how they can design these platforms.
Australian police have alleged the gunmen accused of the shooting in Bondi Beach conducted firearms training before the attack last week. In a document released by a court in Sydney, officers also claim the pair threw homemade explosives into the crowd at Bondi, but they didn't detonate. One gunman was shot dead by police. Another man is facing 15 murder charges. The family of a woman killed by a drink driver are calling for an immediate driving ban for those suspected of causing death by dangerous driving. Lily Clack, who is 22, was seriously injured in a crash on Christmas Day in 2021 and died 3 days later. It later emerged the driver of the car she was in was allowed to keep driving in the year before he was jailed. Lily's mum, Debbie, has exclusively told LBC that a change in the law is needed.
This boy, at the age of 22 years old, had 3 previous drink drive convictions. The fourth, he killed my daughter. And he gets 5 years in prison. Disgusted. Absolutely disgusted.
The Department for Transport says there are already strict penalties in place for those who are caught drink driving. An end to puppy farming and a ban on electric shock collars for pets are being promised as part of major animal welfare reforms. Trail hunting is also set to be banned in England and Wales. Ministers hope to bring in all the planned changes by 2030. And resident doctors in England are returning to work following 5 days of strike action over pay and jobs. The government says resident doctors have received the largest pay rise in any public sector employees over the last 3 years. The doctors' union, the BMA, has said it'll ballot its members for 6 months. More action in the new year. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 98.97. It closed up 59 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain across Scotland and Northern Ireland with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, December the 22nd. Dropped by his publishers, the BBC saying they'll do no future work with David Walliams, but he's still going to be in their Christmas lineup, should that programme be dropped. In other news, do you remember that promise to build, baby build?
And this government will go further and faster to get Britain building. When I said build, baby build, I meant it.
But unfortunately, that dream seems to be lying in tatters as targets are being missed. Another target missed is for the children or school pupils to learn foreign languages. That number has dropped. I'll be asking you how important it was that you had A, excuse me, you had A or some foreign language beside you. Talking about foreign matters, it's absolute disaster in the Ashes. Beaten in almost record time. Speaking after the game, the head coach, the man behind Baz Ball, Brendan McCullum, admitted...
I'm sure there'd be plenty of questions asked, and rightfully so, you know. We haven't got everything right. I haven't got everything right as a coach either, and I put my hand up for that, and you accept that. And
remember the government, the previous Labour government, spending hours, hundreds of hours debating fox hunting? Well, now they want to ban trail hunting, despite the fact how important it is to the rural economy. They really just don't get rural affairs, do they? Plus...
A flock of pigeons at an historic market have pitted animal rights activists against both market traders and the council. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Norwich.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The BBC has refused to drop David Walliams from its Christmas schedule despite pledging to cut ties with him. This, of course, comes after his publishers, HarperCollins, have dropped him following an investigation done by the Telegraph, Daily Telegraph newspaper, into alleged inappropriate behaviour towards young women. Walliams stands accused of harassing a female member of staff at the firm, who subsequently left with a five-figure payout. I need to tell you that he has denied all the allegations. Here he is at work.
Oh, you, a child? You know I'm a lady, don't you?
No.
I'm a lady and my name is Emily Howard. Look, Emily Howard. Good day.
That one?
Yeah.
Well, that is a book on Chinese history.
Yeah, I know.
Well, how do you know? You weren't even looking at it.
Yeah, I know.
It all looks a bit involved, really. Now, how about that book I was telling you about in the van? About the cave boy who lived in a rubbish tip. Stick of the dumps.
I don't want that one.
Computer says no.
Is there nothing we can do? Well, maybe if I ask to borrow a bit less, I don't know, £1,500?
£1,500. Computer says no.
Well, there he is in action, of course, in Little Britain. There was also Come Fly With Me, Britain's Got Talent, and a raft of other television shows. And then... there's just his writing as well, of course. Gangster Granny, The Midnight Gang, Billionaire Boys. So much work, but should he appear this Christmas? LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott is in the studio with me with all the background. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, according to David Walliams' website, he has written more than 40 books, which have sold more than 60 million copies worldwide. I've just been on to HarperCollins UK website to go on his author profile there, but that page is now missing or taken down. On Friday, his publisher, HarperCollins UK, dropped him following an investigation at the company into allegations he had harassed young women. A spokesperson for the company released a statement saying that after careful consideration and under the leadership of its new CEO, HarperCollins UK has decided not to publish any new titles from Mr. Walliams. The statement continued to say HarperCollins takes employee well-being extremely seriously and has processes in place for reporting and investigating concerns. A little bit later on Friday evening, David Walliams denied the allegations. A spokesperson for him said David has never been informed of any allegations raised against him by HarperCollins. It said he was not party to any investigation or given any opportunity to answer questions. David strongly denies that he has behaved inappropriately and is taking legal advice. But there now are, of course, serious questions being asked about projects Mr. Walliams is already involved in, most pressingly perhaps for the BBC, which features Mr. Walliams as a panellist on its forthcoming festive episode of Would I Lie to You, currently scheduled to air on BBC One on Boxing Day. And that episode has actually already made headlines because of Mr. Walliams. It was recorded back in June as a pre-record, and it emerged after that Mr. Walliams had given two Nazi salutes during the recording, apparently discussing a story about wrist injuries when that happened, which the BBC called entirely unacceptable and edited out. A BBC spokesperson has said that while they're not making any changes to the festive schedules, we have no future projects directly involving David Walliams.
Helen Hoddenott reporting. Let's go first to Chris Bannatvala, who's former director of standards at Ofcom, now an independent media consultant sitting on the Sky News board, and joins me now. What will determine the decision the BBC... They haven't had much time. The decision the BBC makes as regards Christmas, and indeed Sky are involved in filming a TV version, I think, or a movie version of one of his works, Thing. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Well, obviously, a lot of money has been spent already on Christmas schedules. But the BBC, again, sort of finds itself in a no-win situation here. It's damned if it does transmit it, and it's damned if it doesn't broadcast it. And it's the same sort of issues as MasterChef with Greg Wallace, where they had that in the can, the whole series. And there were some people who wanted it shown and some people didn't want it shown. Interestingly, it's of note, it's the same production company, Banerjee, that's involved in both the MasterChef programme and this one.
We've got one MP saying, and this is fair, Chris, as you'll know, innocent until proven guilty, but with BBC's record for getting it wrong, probably would be better being safe than sorry. But as you say, and you know well, that leaves a gaping hole in their Christmas schedule.
It does. And, you know, you've already said that David Walliams has denied them these allegations, said he didn't know about the investigation. It wasn't a BBC investigation. And I think until the full facts comes out, it's very, very difficult. You know, it's yet to be proven. Having said that, he is becoming a more and more controversial figure. He's got a sort of list of controversies going back to Little Britain, the stage show that he had where he called up audience members and allegedly took down their pants and trousers, HarperCollins, and also a history in quite strong stereotyping. So, you know, times change, etc. And, of course, comedians must be allowed to make mistakes. And pre-records are there in order for the compliance people to make sure that the editorial process takes place. And if they do something that's inappropriate, they cut it out. But, you know, the BBC can't win on this one.
Chris, do we have any precedent that we can turn to here? Because, as I mentioned, Sky are working in Australia now on something called Thing, following the story of two librarians who will do anything to keep their daughter happy. It was written in 2019 by Walliams. But if they go ahead with it, presumably we can look at past instances where entertainers who, and I remind everybody, he is innocent, but if these allegations were to be proven, viewers and others, well, they vote with their remote controls, don't they? They don't really want to consume that kind of material.
They don't, but of course, you know, they certainly did in their droves and their millions in the early 2000s when he was doing Little Britain. So, you know, times change and people change, and they're going to have to keep a close eye on this. And it's very difficult. There's a lot of money involved in pulling this stuff. But if he gets, you know, if this gets proven one way or the other, whether it's in the court case or an industrial tribunal, then I think they've got a problem on their hands.
Lastly, if we look at, you quite rightly mentioned Greg Wallace, and we've also had issues with people who've been on Strictly Come Dancing, and now we have Mr. Walliams. Is there something that production companies, producers, broadcasters need to learn from here? Noting that this was filmed, I think, Chris, 6 months ago.
Well, that's the point. It was 6 months ago, and they had time to correct this. But, of course, the latest allegations from The Telegraph about his behaviour are only a few weeks old, and you've got to react pretty quickly. And as I said, until it's absolutely proven one way or the other, I think it has to be, you know, you've got to be very careful because, you could be sued. So you're in a no-win situation. But I think, you know, these comedians, they've got to be able to make mistakes, etc. But there are times where they just step over the line. And, of course, this is not really about editorial standards and making mistakes in comedy. This is actually about behaviour outside the office, and it's more problematic if proved to be true.
Chris, thank you for your time. Chris Bannatvala was Director of Standards at Ofcom, now an independent media consultant who sits on the Sky News, just to stress the Sky News board, not Sky TV, or Sky that, as I say, is involved in this co-production, which is being filmed as we speak in Brisbane, Australia, of something called Thing, F-I-N-G. Just to remind you, so the decision obviously has to be made fairly quickly because this is talking about what will go to air on Boxing Day. The BBC currently refusing to drop him from the Christmas schedules, but they have said they have no plans to do any further work from him. This follows the revelations on Friday, which did reverberate around the broadcasting world, it has to say, when the HarperCollins, the publishers, decided that they would not do any more work with him, and indeed they've dropped him. This has followed an investigation into alleged inappropriate behaviour towards young women, accused of harassing a female member of the staff who subsequently left with a five-figure payout. Also, allegations that women were told that if they went to his home, they had to go in pairs and that they had to be aware of his behaviour. I say again, he denies all those allegations. So what should they do? As the MP who tried not to give his or her name to the newspaper says, we do have something called innocent until proven guilty, but it is a bad look, and given the BBC's track record, and do I need to remind you, Greg Wallace, Bob Villain, the Hamas documentary, there are so many instances, or even Hugh Edwards as well, do they need to take action? Also, coming up later in the show, I take you back to the moment the gunman opened fire on Bondi Beach in Australia earlier this month.
Oh, my God.
Fifteen innocent people lost their lives. Later in the show, I'll speak with the daughter of a man who was shot and wounded, but fortunately survived in that attack. That's coming up later. It's 7.15, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's reportedly considering following Australia in banning social media for under-16s. Australian police have alleged the gunmen accused of the shooting in Bondi Beach last week conducted firearms training before the attack. And an end to puppy farming and a ban on electric shock collars for pets are being promised as part of major animal welfare reforms. LBC weather, dry and bright for most. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M20 westbound. There's one lane closed, the junction 2 for Rootham, because of an accident. There were queues in West Horndon on the A127 South End Arterial Road westbound. There's one lane blocked because of an accident at the Halfway House roundabout. It stops start on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions at Catford Station. That's because of some emergency repairs. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Northern Line after engineering works finished late. Collindale Station on the Northern Line is closed. That's in preparation for the opening of the new ticket hall this afternoon. On the train, Southern and Gatwick Express are running a reduced service at Victoria because of festive timetable changes, and there's disruption to a number of TfL bus routes in southwest, west and northwest London until Christmas Eve. That's because of a strike.
LBC.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. Holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and app to protect it. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures. Minimum spend applies. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yoo-hoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
Hit the dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you, Andy, you'll be the first caller 18 minutes after 7. Not only is it a Sunday for Monday in that no newspaper editors can agree, no two can agree on the same story, it's also, of course, just days to go before Christmas, so it is really thin pickings, I think, for some of the editors. I won't share all of them with you. There's an interesting one on the front page of The Sun, which we'll look at a little bit later. The headline, now B snubs Andy, that means Princess Beatrice will stay away from her scandal-hit father, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, this Christmas. She's going on a skiing holiday with friends to avoid embarrassment, an insider says. The Daily Mail says Albanian kingpin smuggling criminals out of the United Kingdom. This is obviously once they've committed crimes, they try and get them off to France and away. I suppose in a related story, traffic coming the other way, the Daily Telegraph. Don't call migration a threat, says EHRC chief, Equality and Human Rights Commission chief. The new head saying it's wrong to see migration in that light. And lastly, let's pick one at random. Here we go, the front page of the Guardian newspaper. Starmer has no coherent plan for social mobility, says key advisor. Let's go to the LBC app, and there's the Prime Minister on that as well. Starmer considers following Australia with under 16 social media bans, saying nothing is off the table. And on the Sky News, the story, I think this might actually get a little bit of interest. This will probably grow. The idea that what's called trail hunting will be banned. That is going to be debated, along with a raft of, most of which appear to be quite certainly worth looking at, animal safety measures. The idea of trail hunting, I'm not so sure on that. But let's pick up on the conversation. David Williams, and is in Worcester. Innocent until proven guilty. Do you want to watch him on Boxing Day? Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Do you want to watch him on this Boxing Day?
I'm happy to watch him, yeah. I mean, until it's sort of investigated and looked into, you can't really start cancelling people. This is the same, as I said before, it's the same thing that happened to Johnny Depp. Everyone sort of jumped on it.
Yes.
And then in the end, who knows what the real story is? It just kind of, it went crazy, and it's...
All I would say in this case, and I will stress again, he denies the allegations, but the publishers obviously think that they've got enough that they want to drop him. They don't want to ever work with him again. And remember his rather unfortunate way that he left ITV when he was caught speaking on a microphone, making disobliging comments about a contestant or someone who was auditioning on Britain's Got Talent. So I'm not saying that this means this is true, but there is a sort of history to it, Andy, and it's whether that's what you want to watch over Christmas or on Boxing Day.
I personally, for me, I just feel like if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it.
Yep.
But you can't. There's no, the law of the land states innocent until proven guilty. Until, you know, I'm not calling it into effect. I'm just saying.
Yep.
I don't know personally what actually happened.
Nobody.
The story is behind the walls of the publisher.
Yep.
Unless they want to come out and say this is actually what he did. Here's the evidence, and an investigation says this is all true, it all rings out.
Yep.
Then that's the point you can sort of start to slur his name. But I don't know what's going on. I like what I like to you. I think he's quite, you know, he's a funny guy.
I mean, no one's seen it. Of course, they have. The production company's seen it. The audience have seen it. But the suggestion he tries to jokingly give a Nazi salute. Now, again, we don't know. I haven't seen it. I doubt that you've seen it. Lastly, is that a cause for concern? So you've now got someone with all these headlines swirling around who reportedly tries to make some form of Nazi salute. Do we want to see that?
I mean, I'd prefer not to see a Nazi salute, let's be honest. I mean,
you just don't know. You're right what you say. It is innocent until proven guilty. Andy, have a good one. I doubt that we'll talk again before Christmas. Very grateful you called. Let's go. Thanks, Andy. Let's go to what social media is saying. Bernie in Kent says, Harper of dropping him. They must have made a fortune with his books. Once again, another star who would appear to think they're invincible, falling off the high horse. Why can't the BBC reshoot the scene when he's doing the salute rather than keeping it in? Well, you're not going to be able to do that, of course, Bernie, because A, you'd have to get him back. B, you'd have to get all the other contestants back. And you'd have to get Rob Brydon back. Now, what you could look at doing, I suppose, is a rather ugly edit. But the BBC's history of editing of late, not been that spectacular, so goodness knows how they've managed to mess that one up. Sandy makes the point, Sandy and Andy make the same point. What's happened to the idea of innocent until proven guilty? People do lie sometimes. Well, okay. HarperCollins, of course, and only the women involved. But there is the allegation that one woman had a five-figure payout for... If, of course, the stories are true. I've said that allegation so many times. Should we move on to something that we can say a fact, which is sadly the continued failure of that ludicrous one-in, one-out policy, as it is revealed that we had a record number, more than 800 migrants, 803 to be absolutely precise, cross the channel in small boats on Saturday. That's a record for this month. Official figures show that more than 1,300 arrived on Britain's shores over the past week, with 803, as I say, making the crossing on Saturday. Let's get more on that now from LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, who joins me. Just remind listeners, if you would, Natasha, the idea that the much lauded, we go back to July, August time, this one in, one out idea, what was the thinking behind it and how much hope was there within Whitehall that it could serve as a deterrent? Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the one-in-one-out deal. I think a lot of officials in government were really hopeful that that was going to essentially be a deterrent for people making that very dangerous journey. The government saying, well, actually, if we catch you and we do return you to France, you will never be allowed to enter and settle in the UK again. However, you are completely right. It has been a bit of an embarrassment for the government that several people have come in via that one-in-one-out scheme and then basically been deported, essentially, back to France and come back to the UK again. And in terms of the numbers, Nick, it's just not had an impact on being a deterrent. As you say, the number's still very startling. Now, there has been nearly a month-long pause in those small boat crossing numbers, partly, we are told, because of the bad weather. You'll remember, Nick, the government have promised to end hotel use by the end of this parliament.
The work's going on now, and the Prime Minister is absolutely determined to close those asylum hotels. And you should expect the Defence Department and other departments weighing in alongside the Home Office in a way that perhaps we haven't seen in the last year to accelerate the progress that we have seen.
That was John Healy speaking to us a few weeks ago. One bit of good news, the Home Office say that the number of hotels has reduced from a peak of 400 down to around 200 in use. And we have in the last few weeks, Nick, seen the Home Secretary's very tough migration policy introduced. She has promised to make refugees and asylum seekers wait years longer in order to stay in the UK.
This consultation addresses the question of the so-called Boris wave. Specifically, the cohort of lower qualified workers who entered the country along with their dependents through the health and care visa, some of whom are never expected to be net economic contributors. It is right that we apply more stringent controls for this group, and for that reason, we propose they should wait 15 years before they can earn settlement.
But sadly, Nick, that pause in boat numbers came to an end at the end of last week. We've now seen around 1,400 dangerous crossings made in the last week alone. The French say they've helped turn back or helped take back to France around 150. And Nick, it means that we are on track for a record-breaking December and a record-breaking year. Potentially, overall, it's not at the moment the highest year on record. That was 2022. Around 45,000 people made that dangerous crossing. It looks like 2025 could be the second highest, more than 41,000 people making that journey at the moment, risking their lives to come to Britain. A Home Office spokesperson has said today the number of small boat crossings are shameful. The British public deserve better. But clearly, Nick, their policies, including, as you say, the one-in-one-out scheme, which we understand has sent back around 150 people to France, not having quite as much of an impact as some officials hoped.
Natasha, just before I let you go, I think you would agree this has very much driven the political agenda of 2025, and I would think that Nigel Farage and his Reform UK colleagues can point to some of the success they've enjoyed as a result of that. Is it again going to dominate much of 2026, do you imagine?
I completely think it will, Nick. Obviously, you know, you heard Keir Starmer speaking just a few months ago about how immigration, the NHS and the cost of living were his three main domestic priorities. And Nick, there is another report out in The Guardian today which says the government are planning to open up that site in Crowborough in East Sussex from the start of the new year to host migrants in. Now, you'll remember at the time we heard some very, very angry local opposition. So actually, obviously, the fact the government are trying to shut these hotels yet opening these military barrack sites. Obviously, hotels and asylum seekers in the last year has been such a huge issue for the government to get grips on. The government point to new laws in Germany. They hope that's going to make a difference too. Another major change, is it really going to drive down those numbers in 2026?
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. In a related story, the new head of the Equalities Watchdog, Marianne Stevenson, says that we should warn against demonisation of migrants. We should not call them a threat. This is a shift from her predecessor, who warned last year that actually integration in Britain appeared to be failing. Which is it? Integration is failing, or, and therefore it is in a terms that the way they assimilate is a threat, or we shouldn't use that language. It's wrong. It's a demonisation of immigrants, which is the position that we should be taking. 7:28, Lewis in Thornton Heath on the subject of David Walliams. What should happen now? Good morning to you, Lewis.
Good morning, Nick. I wouldn't be able to say categorically what should happen, but I can give you a story.
Oh, yeah, please.
We had David Williams as a guest to our school. We get frequent visitors. And he was doing a book talk. I think it was a few years before the pandemic.
Mm.
His talk was absolutely excellent. You know, one of the best we've had. But as I joked to staff afterwards, our school hall was barely large enough to accommodate his absolutely massive ego. He did stand out. And we've had some pretty high-profile visitors from time to time. We've been lucky with that. He stood out in my memory as the neediest and most attitudinal visitor we've ever had.
In what way did that show itself?
A sort of air of a bad smell under his nose the whole time, except
really?
When he was with the children, which, to be fair, he was excellent.
How interesting, but difficult to work with as
very difficult. Yeah.
How interesting.
See, you can't fake it. You can see that is obviously how he is.
Yeah. Yeah, what's it they say? Once you fake sincerity, you've got it made. Fascinating story, Lewis. Thank you. Best wishes to you. And, of course, well, the pupils will have broken up. But, Lewis, thank you for that story. Have a good one. Let's go to social media. And the text, Jim in Lincoln. Williams wasn't made aware of any allegations. He wasn't part of any investigation and didn't have any questions put to him. But he's been dropped and now well on his way to being cancelled. Not quite sure how that marries up. I don't find him funny, by the way, and would rather watch paint dry. Andy in Portsmouth, this is pathetic. The allegations against Williams, he's an absolute legend in this country and is adored by millions. I'm fed up with this New Age nonsense. I've changed your last word. Trevor Tiller says, funny, the BBC can change the scheduling and remove Mandy over a political feature, but not the programme featuring David Williams. Could easily replace it with a repeat after all the amount of repeats we already see. Do keep them coming. And I'm afraid it's a repeat of yet more woe down under for our cricketers.
There's the edge. Retained. Poland does the job. And in the city of churches, Australia administer the final rites.
In the city of churches, but we're all mourning. Of course, English cricket, Ashes lost in almost world record time. That was from TNT Sports. We're looking at that later in the show. Plus, tally-ho, and get ready for attempt to ban trail hunting. Yet another blow to rural Britain. We'll look at that in more detail. 7.31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is read by Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is understood to be considering an Australian-style ban for on social media for under-16s. A government spokesman has told LBC that nothing is off the table to keep children safe online. Australian police have alleged the gunmen accused of the shooting at Bondi Beach conducted firearms training days before the attack. In a document released by a court in Sydney, officers also claim the pair recorded a video setting out what they called their justification. And the government is setting out what it says is the most ambitious animal welfare strategy in a generation. Under the plans, puppy farming and trail hunting are set to be banned in England and Wales. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Badges are earned, not bought. I'm former Harlequins and England rugby captain Chris Robshaw. And I'm here to tell you the JQ7 has arrived.
The JQ7 has everything to prove. It proves the form with standout design and premium comfort. Engineered for driving confidence every day. Discover the JQ7 for yourself at JQFG Barnes, Guildford. Specification may vary. Range based on WLTP data, dependent on individual driving conditions.
But that makes gold. Then earns points on obscure vintage football shirts. And cheesy chips before the match. And on tickets to the game. And you can put those points towards the cab home when they lose 4-0. And that's because Amex Gold lets you earn points on what you love and what you don't to spend on things you like.
Representative 86.3% APR variable. Annual fee applies after the first year. Terms apply. 18 plus, subject to approval.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own road. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor-make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
come back to more of your conversation concerning David Williams, and also the idea of migration. Is it fueling division and failing, as the previous boss of the EHRC, Equality and Human Rights Commission, is saying, or should it not be seen as a threat? There should not be demonisation of immigrants. Well, I agree there should not be demonisation of anyone. Of course, that's absolutely ridiculous. But I do think the pressures that unchecked migration have brought to the country, it shouldn't be off the table. We shouldn't be frightened. This cannot be another conversation that we're too frightened to have, surely. Have I told you the time? 7:34? Let's get into the world of business. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB and joins me now. And whoa, now on the steel front. What's happened there, Kathleen? Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Nick. So 2,000 workers face the axe in Scunthorpe. That's after a secret government plan to shut down Britain's last remaining blast furnace. So obviously terrible news before Christmas, Nick. And it comes really hot on the heels after British Steel was rescued back in April. But this is getting to be a very expensive rescue package because it is costing us, costing the taxpayer £1 million a day. But if they did close it down, it would leave our economy pretty exposed, as we'd be the last major economy in the G7 to not have our own, to not be able to make steel from scratch, to not have a blast furnace. So under the plan, British Steel would be, that would be merged with Speciality Steel UK. So it means shutting down the two last blast furnaces at Scunthorpe and instead rebooting this very old electric mothballed plant in Rotherham to make steel from old scrap metal and not from iron ore. So it's a controversial plan, and obviously the unions, as you can imagine, they're absolutely up in arms, and they've said that this threatens the UK's sovereignty. But I think in like kind of our strained fiscal circumstances, the government have to make some tough choices, and it seems like they might be making them at the expense of these workers in Scunthorpe.
Let's move to other matters, and with the sense of doom and gloom pervading the England cricket tour of Australia. Are you a cricketing fan? Do you follow the sport or not?
I don't mind it. I like the Ashes.
Okay, you weren't getting up at 3 a.m, though, to see utter despair and destruction. But unfortunately, cricket not doing rather well in the bar business either.
No, it's not. So it's more woe for Ben Stokes, actually. So he backed Sixes, which is a cricket-themed bar. You might have seen them around, Nick. No. You might have even gone to one.
No, as my colleagues will know, I'm no stranger to bars, but I've missed this particular one. So it's a cricket theme to it, is it, Kathleen?
It's a cricket theme, yes. So you go in, they're basically whole parties where people take turns kind of using a bowling machine, essentially. And then obviously the aim of it is to score as many runs as possible. And if you score the most runs, then you're the winner. It's fun. I haven't been in many, many years, and I didn't realise how big it had grown, actually, because it's now a chain, and they've got 16 venues. Now, it's gone into administration recently, because of this, you know, obviously very challenging period in the hospitality sector. So far, though, only one of them closed down, the one in Southampton. So they're trying to keep them open. And as I mentioned, it's backed by an investment group called Forecast, which is founded by Ben Stokes, Jofra Archer and Stuart Broad. You might recognise those names.
Yes, indeed. Yep, absolutely. A few runs between them. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But hopefully it's enough to keep this going. But they are, you know, the administrators are pretty optimistic that they can find some investors. But it does, I think, show kind of two issues with hospitality at the moment. The one is how they've been absolutely battered by the budget. So higher business rates, higher minimum wage and everything else like that. And obviously more chains could get into trouble if Christmas isn't a good season for them. But there's also huge competition for these experiential bars and experiences, and rivals include Boom Battle Bar and Flight Club, which you might have been to.
Okay.
I haven't actually been to either of those.
I'm afraid I seem to be missing out on these experiences, so I'll have to put that right in the new year. Just days to go, so they're not having good luck at Sixes, but with days to go to Christmas, it seems the West End is performing rather well.
Oh, it really is. High street footfall has surged over the Christmas period. We saw Black Friday footfall was up by 9% on last year. After that, it was up by 4%. And actually, the first shopping weekend in December was huge. Regent Street was actually closed to traffic. Footfall was up 30%. And Oxford Street had like live music and special offers going on with all the shops. And they posted footfall of 25%. So it does suggest that retail sales actually fell very unexpectedly in November, but it looks like they have gained strong momentum into December, which is really good to hear, obviously.
Kathleen, thank you. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB, 738. Lee's in Leicester. Lee, David Williams, should they continue with this Boxing Day special? Good morning.
Good morning. All the best to you. I don't like the chap. Never have done.
Right.
But that's my opinion. I'm entitled to that.
You are?
I won't watch it the weekend because, like, I don't like him. But a few weeks back, my wife and I watched The Wheel.
That's Saturday afternoon with the brilliant Michael McIntyre. Is that the show?
Indeed. Yeah, brilliant show. Brilliant.
Man.
And he was on The Wheel. He was on The Wheel. And in the first few minutes, I thought he was offensive. He was loud without knowing it. And he offended a contestant, whether or not I definitely noticed it. There was a question or something. She didn't choose him or something like that.
This is written up on the week. This is so interestingly because I read this in, I can't remember, the Sunday Express or the Mail on Sunday. And they said, and he was really rude to the contestant,
yes,
him or her, why didn't you see I was right all along? Or something like that, he said.
Yeah, exactly. And I noticed it. And I thought, oh, my God, wow. I think he didn't know he's doing it. And the fact that it was in the media the next day makes me even, I must have a different skill of noticing these things. But just not pleasant. Very loud, very offensive. He didn't know it. And as she was going down in a chair, he said that, and I just thought, my God, she's just been knocked out, might not come back again. You know, you need to choose your words wisely. So I probably, and that's the school chap a minute ago who phoned up.
Yeah.
I don't know. People saying, oh, woke. But sometimes there's reasons why people think like they do, you know.
I do. Lee, have a good one. Let's hope there's a bit of Christmas glee up in Leicester because the football team isn't providing it at the moment. That was a shocker on the weekend. Lee, thank you. Chris, you'll be the next caller. But let's go to another matter. And we already touched on this earlier in the show, didn't we? The promise to build, baby build, not going too well. Now, last month, I challenged the man at the head of this for the government, Housing Secretary Steve Reid, over whether the government would hit that target of 1.5 million homes. He said they're on track.
If you look at
starts, you're not going to hit your target of 1.5.
Well, we are, because it takes some time between putting in an application, getting planning consent, and then getting space in the ground and having the home. You're not going to see them yet. That hasn't started. But we've got a law going through Parliament right now that will get royal assent this side of Christmas to speed up the planning process.
If I'm still alive at the end of this term of Parliament, do you want a 100-quid bet? And the money to go to a homeless charity shelter in Streatham and Croydon North. I don't think you're going to get it, and I'd happily put 100 quid towards your charity. You going to put 100 quid bet with me?
If I'm still in post-nick, and I hope I am.
I'm still alive, Mr. Reid.
I mean, I hope I don't get this from too many journalists, otherwise I'm going to potentially be out of pocket.
And the relevance of that area is, of course, is his local constituency, if you're a little confused. So, slightly more than 200,000 homes have been built in England this year. 203,900, which is, well, you can do the math, as they say in the States, or the maths. It should be 300,000. Steve Turner, Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation. Good to have you on, Mr. Turner. If you agree that something's gone wrong, what's gone wrong? Good morning.
Good morning. I think something has gone wrong, clearly, but not just within this Parliament. Something's been going wrong for quite a number of years.
Sure.
I do think that the government has made some very positive strides on planning in particular. You know, we've seen a lot of very positive initiatives that will, and I think Steve Reid's right, that will in time show the benefits and bring houses forward. However, I think the government's fallen into the trap of believing that planning is the only barrier currently to house building, and we've got to see some action in terms of viability, the level of taxation on development, and to help buyers buy if they're going to get to their target within the Parliament.
What are the other obstacles then, Mr. Turner?
Well, viability on sites. There was a recent Zoopla report out that showed that half the country now, it's not viable to develop on. And that's because over recent years, we've seen more and more policy requirements and taxes layered onto development, to the point where now in swathes of the country, it's just not viable to build houses on sites. So we've got to find a way to reduce the level of taxation, the level of policy costs on development that have crept in over years, and that are just making too many sites not viable. So you've seen in recent years things like biodiversity net gain, you've seen a whole load of building regulation changes that require solar panels and car charging points. you know, the industry's already funding affordable housing, infrastructure improvements, amenity improvements, and all of these are good things to do. But ultimately, if you layer on too many, it becomes not viable. And we've got this year, or next year now, another tax coming in that's £3,000 per house on a building safety levy. You've got increases in landfill tax, etc. So they've got to find a way to reduce that.
Grateful to you. Thank you. Steve Turner, your Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation, 744. Chris is in Kingston. Chris, you're on the radio. You want to talk about David Williams, and I think you worked with him. Is that right?
Good morning, Nick. He was about 19 at the time, I think. And we were in a youth theatre company together. I was quite a bit older than him.
Right.
And
What was your role in the theatre company, Chris?
I was one of the... I suppose you'd call it company directors.
Okay, right.
But yep. I was also an actor as well.
Right.
And I've been an actor and a director. Mm-hmm. But I had a couple of the younger cast members come up to me and complain about David's behaviour.
Right. We better tread carefully. In what area was this then?
Yeah.
What was he doing, allegedly?
I don't want to say anything that's libelous or whatever.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But they were being bullied.
Right. Okay.
So I can well believe the accusations that have been made.
Did you challenge him?
I did, yes.
What was his response? Sorry, did you say he was 19 at the time?
I think he was 19.
And what was his response?
He looked terrified, and as soon as the run of the play had finished, he left the theatre company.
Did he really?
Yeah. We were doing a production of Shakespeare's Love to Labour's Lost. Mm.
Did you ever work with him again?
No. Never again. Mm. I'm not going to say anything...
No, you've done brilliantly, because you've... And, of course, we need to just remind everybody, Mr. Williams denies all the allegations after being dropped by HarperCollins. Chris, thank you for your input on that. Have a safe one. Carl says, I always thought David Williams missed a trick because of all the woke of the last 10 years. Little Britain would have had a field day. These are just allegations. I would independently make Little Britain and stick it on YouTube. It would be a smash. I think you're talking about sort of new episodes is what you're saying, rather than put the old ones out. Okay, Carl, let's see if others agree. Coming up later in the show...
A flock of pigeons at an historic market have pitted animal rights activists against both market traders and the council. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Norwich.
Well, not quite where eagles dare, but where pigeons fly, and our man Riley is on his way. 7:46, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The government's reportedly weighing up an Australian-style ban on social media for children under 16. Police in Australia have alleged the gunmen accused of last Sunday's shooting in Bondi Beach carried out firearms training days before the attack. And resident doctors in England have returned to work following their 5-day strike over pay and jobs. LBC weather dry and bright for most, outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M25. Clockwise, there's one lane closed. The car has broken down between Junction 24 for Potters Bar and Junction 25 for Enfield. There are queues in West Horndon on the A127 South End Arterial Road westbound. There's one lane blocked after the Halfway House roundabout because of an investigation. There are queues in Highbury on the A1 Holloway Road. It's partly blocked both ways at Highbury Corner because of an accident. It's stop-start on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions around Catford Station. That's because of some emergency repairs. It's slow in Hayes on the Uxbridge Road. It's partly blocks both ways at Cold Harbour Lane because of an accident. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the entire Northern Line after engineering works overran earlier, and Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hertford East because of flooding.
LBC.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background, so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence. That's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
That was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dobe like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a doze bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
FanningDental.co.uk.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes-on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do
is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 8. Tony, Tom, you'll be on the radio with your views in just a moment. But here is the moment yesterday when the dream finally died.
There's the edge, and there is the Ashes retained. Poland does the job. And in the city of churches, Australia administer the final rites. Australia retain the Ashes.
Yes, and many people, of course, in mourning. England captain Ben Stokes' reaction.
I think it's quite simple for me that Australia have been able to execute batting, bowling and fielding on a much more consistent basis. And those are three things that cricket is built around. It's scoring runs, taking wickets and catching catches. You just can't be so poor with your execution as consistently as we have been over these first three games, and particularly with the ball. Because when you're off here, it gets punished, and we've seen that. But they've just completely out-executed us.
And the man very much under fire now, head coach Brendan McCullum.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of questions asked, and rightfully so. You know, we haven't got everything right. I haven't got everything right as a coach either, and I put my hand up for that, and you accept that, and you try and work out ways that you can try and, identify things which you need to make sure that that you polish up on to give yourselves more chance.
Cricket coverage there provided by TNT Sports. So what went wrong? Striding to the crease to tell us, former England captain, masterful batsman David Gower, joining us from Adelaide. David, did we expect too much? Was there an opportunity, or were Australia just too good? Afternoon to you, morning to us.
Evening, yes. It's almost time for an early evening
tipple.
Sorrow loosener. I don't think we expected too much, because there were some very sound reasons that Ben Stokes is absolutely right, the execution was horribly poor in every department, but if we had seen that team play anywhere near its best, and it had such a golden opportunity at Perth in the first test match, and a mad 20 minutes, 30 minutes just after lunch on day two changed that whole thing, and in fact changed the whole series, because at that moment England's advantage disappeared in a puff of smoke. Then they were chasing in Brisbane. In Adelaide there were signs of people actually having thought about it, which was nice, but of course the whole point was that this was a project for the Stokes-McCullum team and management that had to go well. Everything that they've been doing for the last 3 years had to go well here in Australia. Everyone thought they were going to be underprepared because they didn't give themselves much time before the first test match. They denied it. History would say that they were underprepared because they were nothing like the team they should have been in Perth. And they hadn't got it right in Brisbane, where, again, Australia got all three departments right and played much better. And then in Adelaide, as I say, signs that actually things were changing. But if you've got a five test match series and you're just about starting to get the hang of it towards the end of the third test match, logic, mathematics, cricket history, Douglas Adams, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they all tell you you've got it wrong.
Do we say bye-bye to Baz Ball?
Well, we've been saying that... I hate using that word.
Oh, I do.
There's more to Baz Ball... sorry. there is a lot more to it than just the basics of sort of being too positive and gung-ho. But yes, a lot of us from my era, for instance, my colleagues of the same era looking at this thing, have admired it for what it is, but have always said it needs to be cleverer. In other words, it needs to recognise match situations. And I think one of the things actually that could also change is that the balance of things in this 11, we don't have a class spinner. We have no spinner to speak of, I'm afraid. But the balance of things in the batting department, it's lovely having people who can play great shots and be forceful on flat pitches against weaker opposition. But you do need someone with a bit of grit and determination now and again when things are tough. And Stokes has done his best to show her that's done. Crawley, in the second innings here in Adelaide, showed that he'd actually had a bit of a think about it and could actually play a slightly different game, which is great to watch. He can be very expansive. He can be brilliant. But he's seldom given himself the chance to be either because he kept getting out by being overambitious early on. So there are signs of what people understand should happen. But again, I just repeat, it's no use coming to that conclusion towards the end of the third test match out of five.
Lastly, 5-0, 5-0, or will they claw one back?
Oh, I hope not. I mean,
sledging from your Aussie mates. It must be hell, David.
It's even worse, getting sympathy. that's the most clawing thing. As you say, there's plenty of people I know down here having travelled here for the last 40-plus years. We've seen one of them today, one of the great winemakers, a fellow called Jeff Merrill, who, we could do a bit of a contest. they love the game. They love England, but they want something very different to what they've watched. And I've seen it a few times here before. But yes, 5-0 will be devastating.
All right. I think it's time for a cheeky cab sav where you are, David.
Good idea. I'm looking at one half a metre away.
Enjoy. Happy Christmas. Best of the family. David Gower, thank you. Worth reminding you, Mr Gower led England and won the Ashes a few years ago, but he skippered England to an Ashes victory. David Gower, thanks for your time. Have a good one. 4 minutes before 8 is the time. We're coming back to the UK. David Walliams, dropped by HarperCollins, of course, no longer working with ITV. Sky, though, still filming something bizarrely down in Australia too. Tony's in Chichester. Tony, your view on this. Good morning.
Morning, Nick, and a happy Christmas.
And to you, sir.
Yes, it was a bit embarrassing down below, wasn't it?
Oh, mate.
I mean, especially when Stuart Broad labelled the Australian team geriatrics. They're always going to come back and bite us.
I think it is this ill-preparedness, because they did seem to have a few purple patches on this third test, but as David Gower said, you can't start fighting halfway through the third test.
No.
Anyway, to Mr. Walliams, what should happen with the BBC now?
Well, I think the BBC should show the programme. I think just some people seem to be offended at everything. Let people who want to watch it, watch it. Those that, if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it.
All it is the way they acted over Greg Wallace. They've had Hugh Edwards. They've had Bob Villain. They've had those docos, documentaries. They have an unerring ability to get it wrong. That's all I'd say, lastly, Tony.
It's a shame, because MasterChef, I love those two on that. They really work well together. And it's such a shame. Can I just make another point? Sure. I still think my wave machine is a good idea.
Your what? A wave machine. This is the idea. Coming back to the migrant story, we're going to make giant waves. Yes, but of course, what about the ferries? Tony, I did enjoy that call. Well done. Have a good year. Have a good Christmas. Talk in the new year. Thanks, Tony. Tom in Chelmsford. Tom, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking me a call, Bill.
Not at all, sir. Your view.
Two viewpoints, legal and media. Should there be a legal cut-off point, say, 10, not including children, but of 10 years between he said and she said?
When you get... That would mean that whatever Andrew Mountbatten Windsor might or might not have been involved in would never be known. I'm not very comfortable about that, Tom. Are you?
Well, I'm not very comfortable with someone like Williams. He hasn't been charged with anything. He hasn't been taken to court, but his reputation is being destroyed. So somebody brought up a comment just recently, well, a couple of calls ago, the things he did when he was 18.
Yeah.
So it's sort of 40 years ago.
Yeah, probably.
Should the media have some sort of self-discipline when I say we won't report anything?
Well, what would that apply to? I mean, obviously not serious crime, surely.
No, what I'm saying is when you get it, he said, and yeah. I said, and she said.
So he said, she said, as they call it. Yeah. Yeah. Should there be a time limit? Tom, I think, save for what we're learning about the Epstein files, as we know them, we called them over the weekend with a release, and many of that goes back 10 years. But I hear what you're saying. There will now be a feeding frenzy. And as you say, there is no proven the allegations. And why don't we conclude by saying, again, he does deny them. Thanks for that. Coming up after the news. It's tally-ho as the government looks to ban trail hunting. But what will the impact be on the rural economy? Plus, why learning foreign language is so important, and indeed the decline is setting our children backwards, and the council that's urged to leave markets 400 pigeons in peace. LBC's Henry Riley is on the way. Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Keir Starmer is reportedly considering an Australian-style ban on social media for children under the age of 16. The Prime Minister previously said he was personally against that kind of blanket restriction, but a government spokesman has told LBC that nothing is now off the table. David Savage is from the mental health support charity Ripple and says it could help protect against online harms.
I think it's really interesting. There was a stat that only a third of parents intended to enforce it, which is, you know, to me a bit concerning because I see firsthand all the harmful content that gets delivered to young people through forums and apps. But I'm watching that as well. We're really interested in seeing how that pans out. And I hope that even if some good is done by it, then we could look at doing something similar over here.
Australian police have alleged the two men accused of the shooting at Bondi Beach carried out firearms training ahead of the attack. Court documents submitted by officers also claim the pair threw explosives into the crowd, but they didn't detonate. One gunman was shot dead by police. Another man is facing 15 murder charges. Speaking earlier, the Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says tougher sentencing and revised gun laws are being considered.
To make sure that this is indeed a time where we have what is needed, which is urgency and unity, not division and delay.
A Russian general has been killed in an explosion in Moscow this morning. Officials say it was a car bomb. Fenil Savarov was the head of operational training for the armed forces. The government is outlining a raft of changes to policy on animal welfare. Puppy farming and trail hunting are set to be banned as part of the plans for England and Wales. Ministers say it's the most ambitious strategy in a generation. And resident doctors in England are returning to work this morning after 5 days of strike action over pay and jobs. Health experts say the full impact is yet to be assessed, though, due to thousands of appointments being cancelled because of the action. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 98.97. It closed up 59 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Come on, guys, we're late!
Mum, can I borrow your phone quickly?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after eight on Monday, December the 22nd. And coming up in this hour, on the warpath, it could be an end to trail hunting. But animal welfare plans are another blow for farmers because there are other measures as regards the farming of chickens and pigs. We'll give you all the details of that. And then, most importantly, of course, take your view. Plus,
The family of a woman who died after a crash on Christmas Day are calling for suspected killer drivers to have their license suspended immediately. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
Did you, like me, wonder at the amount of photographic evidence that was released over the weekend in the so-called Epstein files? There is no way back now, of course, for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It's even revealed one of his own daughters would rather go skiing than spend Christmas with him. Is there a suggestion the only way he might possibly claw back some kind of credibility is to actually go to the United States and face his allegations? Jennifer Freeman is a lawyer acting with one of Epstein's victims.
It's not just the victims, it's also the victims' families, because it affects not just that person, but everyone they deal with, their loved ones, the people that they come in contact with.
Plus the importance of learning foreign languages.
J'ai deux chats qui s'appellent Fifi et Loulou. Le plus petit est noir et le plus grand est blanc.
Now I know you won't need me to translate it, but it was I have two cats called Fifi and Lulu. The smaller one is black and the bigger one is white. But this comes as more and more of our children are not taking foreign languages. The number's now declining. Did you learn a language? How important was it? And do you, like me, mourn the fact that our children are not studying, whether it's French, Spanish or German or any other language?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Who can say no to a bit of horn before Christmas? That is the post-horn gallop performed by the London Banqueting Ensemble. I would say that's maybe just a beat too quick, actually. I don't go... When the famous foxes of Leicester City trot out, it doesn't go quite at that pace. But we had that because Labour have been accused of launching a fresh attack on rural England by outlawing trail hunting. They will today announce a ban on the field sport in, if you don't understand, hunters follow packs of hounds through the countryside in search of pre-laid scents rather than animals. Now, it's part of a wider animal welfare strategy. We may touch on other matters. This is what they say. Also going to outlaw cages for chickens and pigs. I think that's when... Is it called farrowing? I think it is, isn't it? Because there is a danger that sometimes the mother pig will accidentally lie on some of its piglets and, of course, they die. Anyway, let's stay with the trail hunting for now. They say they're taking the action over fears trail hunting is being used to cover up the hunting of foxes, which, of course, is illegal. Environment Minister Baroness Hayman saying, in our manifesto, we said we'd ban trail hunting. That's exactly what we'll do. There is evidence that trail hunting is being used as a smokescreen for the hunting of wild animals, and that's not acceptable. We're working out the best approach to take the ban forward, and we'll run a consultation, there you go, at last. We're on a consultation to seek views in the new year. Let's turn first to Polly Portwin, who's director of the Campaign for Hunting at the Countryside Alliance. Do we have any idea of the number of people who are employed as farriers and huntsmen and possibly huntswomen by this sport? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the hunting as a whole generates about £100 million to the rural economy every year. And, of course, there are lots of full-time jobs in kennels and hunt staff. But beyond that, as you say, the ancillary jobs for the farriers, I mean, I can't tell you exactly the level, but it goes beyond just those employed in hunting.
What will happen to all the beagles and foxhounds and whatever else are the dogs, the packs of dogs?
Well, look, we're determined that we will find a way forward for our packs of hounds and find a future because, I mean, the welfare of our hounds, our beagles, our foxhounds, the horses is paramount and we will find a way forward. This government has got a consultation. We are going to fight that, fight the potential ban all the way and we hope to find a way forward to make sure that packs of hounds could be seen going across the countryside and meeting on Boxing Day for years to come.
They're doing it, or the justification is, that it's used as a cover-up for the hunting of foxes, which, of course, as we all know, now is against the law. How do you respond to that?
Look, there is a law in place that works perfectly well. It's called the Hunting Act. And although it wasn't something that we welcomed 20-odd years ago, hunts have adapted, as they always do and as they have to comply with the law. And people are prosecuted. There are more people prosecuted and have been prosecuted under the Hunting Act than there have in any other wildlife legislation. So the Hunting Act works. It is enforceable. And if people break the law, it's there to they're there to be... accounted, they have to be accountable for it. But it works. The last Labour government spent 700 hours of parliamentary time discussing hunting. That case should be settled behind us. Let people get on hunting a smelly rag, following a smelly rag across the countryside, and which is all good for their physical and mental health and gets people out in the fresh air.
Many people are saying that this government simply doesn't understand, doesn't get rural folk or the countryside. Polly Portman, how would you respond?
Well, we feel this is just another attack on the countryside after the farming issue, the inheritance tax and potential issues with shooting. And generally, we just feel this is another attack on the countryside. We welcome people to come, find out more about our way of life, bring them to kennels. We invited MPs and the police to activities recently to see trail hunting in action, but they won't come. They will not face the reality that this is a lawful activity. And we are we've got an open door. We welcome people to come and see our lawful activities.
And lastly, just to revisit that point, the allegations of widespread abuse, you don't recognise that?
Not at all. Abuse of the Hunting Act, you mean? Not at all.
Yes, sorry, so that they are hunting, foxes are being hunted.
Not at all. No, we have more than 10,000 days hunting a year. That's over a quarter of a million since the Hunting Act came into force. And yet just a handful of hunts have been prosecuted. That's despite hours and spurious allegations by vigilante groups coming out and watching. We know if there was the evidence, take it to the appropriate sources and get to the police and get people prosecuted. We know that is not happening. There's a quarter of a million days, handful of prosecutions. The evidence is not there. Hunts are not abusing the law.
Grateful for your time, Polly Portman, Director of the Campaign for Hunting at the Countryside Alliance. Thank you. 8:10. Listening, Dominic Dyer, who's an animal welfare campaigner, policy advisor for Born Free Foundation. Your reaction to what you're hearing and what is proposed to be the change in legislation. Good morning, Mr. Dyer.
Well, I welcome the animal welfare strategy. We've been waiting for a long time. There's some really good things in here for domestic animals, for improving livestock, but also for wild animals as well. And obviously, we're talking about fox hunting. With due respect to Polly, you know, if you look at the Hunting Act, it's got more holes than a Swiss cheese. And there has been widespread illegal activity by hunts going on for decades up and down the country. Every year, we see hundreds of incidents of foxes being illegally killed. And also, these hounds are out of control. You know, you have laws in place for when you walk your dog, Nick, down the road. You've got to keep it on a lead. But, you know, packs of foxhounds go across railway lines, across motorways, across roads. They're extremely dangerous. They go into people's houses and gardens and kill their domestic pets.
Well, not
regularly. So, you know, this is a welfare issue for the hounds.
Mr. Dyer, not regularly. I know I'm not disputing that that happens occasionally, but they don't regularly maraud into people's back gardens.
They do regularly. They're very difficult to control. And I've been on the Isle of Wight where I used to live, and I've actually encountered a huge number of hounds across the road. It was very dangerous. This happens an awful lot. If you live in Oxfordshire and other parts of the countryside, you will see that. You can't control these animals when they're following an animal scent.
Right. I did live in the countryside. I grew up in a village in Kent where they did ride to hounds, and they all used to meet in the Lion pub in Boxing Day, and we used to go and watch them, so I know exactly. We've just heard from that other contributor that there were 250,000 hunting days, and she would say only a handful of those events taking place.
No, it's difficult to bring cases to court. We had a quite famous incident. Yeah, because that's the way the law is at the moment, Nick. You know, you get lots of incidents actually recorded every year. We have drone footage increasingly these days. We have situations arise where even fox cubs are being fed to packs of hounds. They're being illegally bred and they're being used as bait.
You've got documentary evidence of that.
Yes, there is documentary evidence, and there have been custodial sentences over that. So, you know, you have situations arise where the police cannot control what's happening in the countryside. You also have a lot of confrontation as well between hunts and those who oppose hunts. So what the police have been quite rightly asking for is that the government looks at tightening the legislation.
But the legislation is already there, of course.
It has loopholes within it.
But no, you're not allowed to chase foxes. You're not allowed to hunt foxes. That is plain. I mean, this is, as Nigel Farage says, you might as well ban walking dogs in the countryside because they sometimes chase rabbits, hares, deers and foxes.
There is an alternative way of doing this without any problem for wild animals. So rather than this so-called trail hunting, which is a smokescreen, you use an animal scent, you drag it along, and the hounds follow the scent, and then they move animal scent, and they chase down wild animals illegally. That shouldn't happen. That happens. That's a reality. You can't control it.
So what is the alternative?
The other one you can do is drag racing. You can use a non-based animal scent, and you can use bloodhounds, a small number of bloodhounds, not a large pack of foxhounds. And that does
work. Why would they not jump into someone's back garden or run across
the railways? They don't act in the same way. You've got large packs of foxhounds.
Well, how many smaller dogs numbers there be, then?
There's 6-7 dogs, not 40, 50 hounds. This is a significantly less animals. You know, this is a problem. Also, I would say this. Let's be clear about this. You know, many of these foxhounds, when they get injured or when they come to the end of their lives, are killed with bolt guns.
But what
we have situations where these animals are not kept in a
but
good
what
way.
Will
they can't be rehomed easily either. So but, it's an animal welfare issue
okay,
for the hounds as
well. If this is successful, lastly, what will happen to those remaining packs? Say you've got
some of them,
people.
I trust, you know, Polly and others in, who they're responsible will see if they can rehome some of those animals. I
hope
that
it's
they can.
To
but the situation is this, Nick. If you have large numbers of foxhounds across the countryside eating raw meat, following animal scents across the country, they pose a threat to the public and they pose a threat to wildlife. And it leads to illegal activity. One other thing I would say, you have so-called terrier men go out on these hunts. They fill in badger sets to stop the hounds going down the badger sets to lose the foxes. That's illegal. It goes on day in, day out. The hunts know that, but they still allow that to happen. So there's a lot of wildlife crime. And I'll say one more thing about Nigel Farage. A lot of his supporters don't like this either. Polls show over 70% of the public are opposed to this hunting.
I doubt if that's... You had a couple of final points. Mr. Dyer, thank you. Dominic Dyer, you're a policy advisor for Born Free Foundation. I think we can possibly quote polls to each other all day long, and I think it'll be rather different in many rural areas, not necessarily all. Thank you for your time. We'll come to your reactions on that. Calls coming in. And also the importance of learning the language.
El año pasado, mi familia y yo fuimos a Grecia y nos quedamos en un hotel de 5 estrellas con vistas al mar.
Now, I know you all know that that was Spanish last year. My family and I went to Greece and stayed in a 5-star hotel overlooking the sea. But as the number of pupils declines rapidly taking languages, I'm asking you how important language has been for you in your career or your life. It's 8:15 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's reportedly considering following Australia in banning social media for under-16s. Australian police have alleged the gunmen accused of the shooting in Bondi Beach last week conducted firearms training before the attack. And an end to puppy farming and a ban on electric shock collars for pets are being promised as part of major animal welfare reforms. LBC weather, dry and bright for most. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Arquies in West Horndon on the A127 South End Arterial Road westbound. There's one lane blocked because of an investigation after the Halfway House roundabout. It's stop starts on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions at Catford Station. That's because of some emergency repairs. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the entire Northern Line after overnight engineering works finished late. Collindale Station on the Northern Line is closed in preparation for the opening of the new ticket hall early this afternoon. On the trains, Southern and Gatwick Express are running a reduced service at Victoria because of festive timetable changes. Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hartford East after the flooding last week, and there's disruption to a number of TfL bus routes in South West, West and North West London because of a strike.
This is LBC.
Come on, guys, we're late!
Mum, can I borrow your phone quickly?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred. Your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
At Lidl, you can get a whole Christmas dinner for eight for under £1.30 per person with all the trimmings, including fresh Birchwood British whole turkey, potatoes, Yorkshire stuffing, sprouts, carrots, parsnips and, of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. Fresh turkeys on sale 19th of December. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv for details.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dobe like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a doze bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
When you're smiling.
Banning
Dental Group clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
John, Georgie, coming to you in just a moment. This is what you're saying on your text and social media. Jim says, I was walking on a misty April evening. Out of the mist came a pack of hounds. I stood still. They ran past me. It was amazing. Anne in St. Albans, Labour's attempt to ban trail hunting is class warfare disguised as animal welfare. As you probably guessed by the fact that I told you that I grew up in the countryside and I used to... I've never ridden to hounds or taken part in fox hunting. But it used to be one of the village traditions on Boxing Day. Everyone would wander down and watch the hunt gather at the Lion pub and then off they would go. Very much part of country tradition. And seeing as the laws already are in place, and if we take the evidence offered by one contributor of 250,000 hunt days, only a handful of cases, why do we need this? John's in Croydon. John, where are you on this? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, the way I look at it is that from a heritage point of view, where else would we see this form of hunting in display anywhere in the world? Now, we wouldn't go to Ethiopian tribes or any other far-out forms of hunting and stop what they're doing. And to your point, it is trail hunting. They aren't directly after animals. But if we look at things that are appropriate to people and ordinary people who would consider themselves animal lovers, such as a cat owner. You can't tell me there's a cat owner who hasn't had deposited on their doorstep a dead animal of some sort.
Sure.
And these are running rife through urban towns and in the countryside. So if this is solely from an animal welfare point of view, then those who are tending to the horses, those who are looking after those dogs, and those who are displaying them in their natural habitat, in terms of running through, they'll say it's a pursuit, a chase. That's how they're meant to be used. And having this, the money and so on it creates, I think it's, the benefits are multifaceted. And I think there's certain things that, like the RSPB, for example, in order to achieve their mission of successful bird breeding, they must also limit the number of foxes. Mm. So if we publish the figures of the foxes that they limit each year, and are they necessarily doing a successful job in some areas, then these impacts are needed. You know, we are stewards of it.
Stay on the line, John. Please stay, because I don't think everyone's going to agree with you. Georgie in Market Drayton, what would you say to John, Georgie? Good morning.
Well, he lives in Croydon. I live near Chipping Norton, and you exactly went on with the hunt. It's ridiculous. Why would you want to pull an animal apart? And I know
No. This is trail hunting we're talking about. No one's defending
fox. It's trail hunting, but do you think trail hunting doesn't go to real hunting? You've got to be naive to think that.
Well, we've just heard 250,000 days of hunting, only a handful of cases. I mean, to take your argument, we'd better ban cars then, because some people drive cars at speed, some people drive cars when drunk, so let's ban all cars.
Why don't we just ban people?
Well, that's the logical extent of your... That is how your argument...
You sound so pro-hunting, it's unbelievable.
Pardon me?
I mean, I'm a fan of yours. To me, you sound so pro-hunting.
Trail hunting,
I just know what goes on. I know there was a rich banker outside Chipping Norton who actually got his staff to throw chickens to encourage...
Georgie, I'm not going to defend the indefensible, right? That is, if it is true, and I'm grateful that you didn't identify him or her, we have laws in place to stop that. You cannot treat animals in that fashion. I'm absolutely... But trail hunting, I mean, to John's point, it is part of the rural community. Georgie, address that if you would.
I give up. Listen to Nick Packham. And
Do you mean Chris Packham?
Oh, I mean Chris Packham, I beg your pardon. I'm old and a bit deluded.
No, you're not deluded at all. But you are wrong today. All you have to say, Georgie, is I am wrong and I'm sorry.
I am not wrong and I am not sorry.
Christmas is the spirit of goodwill. So simply say, Nick, I am wrong, you are right, and I am sorry.
Rubbish.
Talk about
the elitists and equating good manners with things like...
Right. But what's going to happen to all the people whose jobs depend on trail hunting, and indeed the dogs themselves?
All these people, they have lots of money, as do you.
Farriers do not have lots of money.
If they're so worried about that. Why don't they put some of their monies towards looking after the hounds? And
No. The farriers don't make a lot of money. People who look after the horse's hooves. What are they going to do? And the huntsmen, the people who the pack.
You clearly haven't seen what goes on in hunting.
I have. I lived in the countryside in Kent. Georgie, thank you. John, come back to you. This is the argument, of course, that we have to get. I think people think, since we're talking fox hunting and we're talking trail hunting. John.
Yeah, I mean, as you can say, you tried to set up a debate there, but there's no debate in these people, unfortunately. They've got their idea of what it is, and they don't want to actually have any understanding or learn much more to it. And I think that's what we have as the problem in the countryside. As your lady quite stipulates, she said it's a whole class thing, and started your debate off with, you're from Croydon, what do you know?
Yes, I
know. And it's quite ironic, because being from where I am, I have a rare perspective on the countryside, so I see that, but I see it in terms of relating its people, getting people to understand things. Barbaric going out there and killing is not what the countryside's about.
No.
Management of such is that. So like cutting back trees and so on, that's not deforestation, it's just management of it. So it's all about scale. And in that, we want to see good stewards of the countryside. We want to see an ecosystem that benefits all the natural systems around us, and that benefits us as people as well, because we're part of that system. So whether that's the social side, the economic side, or even the food that we get to our table, or the land we get to look at. These are all things that are stewarded by the countryside, by people that are in part of the hunt. Whether that be the rich man funding it, or the farrier putting the shoes on, it all adds up to part of what we're creating.
I will leave it there, John. Thank you. Gethin says, trail hunting is a smokescreen for fox hunting, and it's disgusting. Meanwhile, Rebecca says, I'm disgusted with you, Nick. You're making it so obvious you're in favour of such barbarism as fox hunting. Rebecca, listen, it's trail hunting we are discussing. I am not... Fox hunting is illegal. I'm not going to support an illegal activity, but I am going to support something that is very much part of the network, part of the fabric, I should say, of the countryside, I would argue, and all the jobs. More calls on that in a moment. Now to other matters. And the family of a woman who was killed in a drink-driving crash where she was a passenger are calling for suspected killer drivers to be banned from driving immediately. 22-year-old Lily Clack was injured in the crash in southwest London in the early hours of Christmas Day on 2021, and died 3 days later. But in the year before the perpetrator was jailed, he was able to continue driving. LBC's reporter Helen Hodnott has the exclusive story. Helen.
Nick, on Christmas Day 2021, in the early hours of the morning, Lily Clack's mum, Debbie, had a knock on the door that every parent fears.
A 2:45, there was a knock at the door, so I got out of bed thinking it was Lily. So I went downstairs, and then I noticed two figures, and a voice came back to me and said, "It's the police, madam." And he said, "Lily's been involved in an accident, and she's at the hospital. We've got to get you there."
She'd been a passenger in a car being driven by 25-year-old Charlie Hilton. He was an acquaintance, and she didn't know that he had been drinking all day. Police tried to stop his vehicle, but he managed to escape them despite his passengers begging him to stop. The car reached 120 miles per hour before crashing into a tree and catching fire. Lily died from catastrophic brain injury. She was surrounded by family on the 28th of December 2021.
We put the radio on, we put the music on, and we put songs on that Lily liked. And we just all prayed. We said the Lord's Prayer, and Lily took her final breath.
Now, Nick, at the moment, under UK laws, suspected killer drivers keep their licences before any ban is then put in place by courts. But that often happens many months later. And it means that 25-year-old Charlie Hilton was able to keep driving for a full year until he was jailed for causing Lily's death by dangerous driving and driving above the alcohol limit. Now, Lily's mum, Debbie, and Aunt Donna are campaigning to change that. Under Lily's law, they want to see automatic interim driving bans for anyone under investigation for causing death by dangerous or drink driving. And they also want more killer drivers to get lifelong driving bans, which at the moment are only issued extremely rarely.
You kill somebody on our roads, your driving licence should be suspended immediately, because then at least us as families then know that that person that did it has got some kind of action.
Now, they say that Charlie Hilton will be released from prison after serving just 5 years for his crimes. And at that point, he will already be halfway through a 10-year driving ban. Now, David Preston is a partner at law firm Lee Day. He represented Lily's family in their civil claim and told me that a change in the law could keep people safe, but would need to be proportional.
There are so many tragic cases that I see doing my job, not just deaths that are caused on the road, but also serious injuries caused on the road. And I think in some of these cases, there is going to be a need to suspend the licence of the person who has caused the injuries. But there, it does need to be balanced against that person's right to be able to drive and to have a fair trial.
A spokesperson for the government says that the forthcoming road safety strategy will introduce tougher measures to deter drink drivers.
Helen Hollenot reporting. 8:29. Let's come back to our conversation about this trail hunting. Glenn in Ipswich, trail hunting proposed ban is envy politics on an issue they don't understand, pure and simple. Bella says, why is this and previous Labour leadership determined to destroy our country life and our rural traditions? Will hundreds of hounds be killed? He hates our farmers. I think he being Sir Keir Starmer. Helen's in Croydon. Helen, your reaction to the news. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. Looking
you might remember that the last time I called, you invited me out for a steak dinner.
Did I?
And I had to decline because I'm vegan.
I don't remember. Oh, right. Did I see. You? I was having sport with you, was I? Right, OK.
You were indeed, yes. And sadly, this sport is a sport that needs to be, you know, consigned to the rubbish bin.
Oh, no, come on, trail hunting. I'm not supporting fox hunting. I absolutely get it.
But sadly, Nick, nothing's really changed. I've been a hunt monitor for 25 years. I've been to hundreds of hunt meets over the years, far too many. And what they claimed was going to happen when fox hunting was banned, all the horses would be destroyed, farriers would be out of business, hounds would be...
because they've got trail hunting.
None of that happened. But they're still hunting, Nick, unfortunately. Whatever we think, what goes on in the countryside, many people don't see. There's not the police to monitor it, so we monitor it. People monitor it, and what we find repeatedly is fox hunting again and again and again. We get terriers. The British Hound Sports Association recently demanded that their members remove terriers and terrier work from hunts because we've got footage of terriers being used to dig out foxes. Now, if they weren't fox hunting,
well, these people should
be
charged. These people
aren't. Well, they have been. There have been 12 arrests, Nick.
Well, then. Right, so that is working.
But this proves that they're still hunting foxes. But, and it's repeated. We've got repeated footage of this again and again and again.
What more can we do than put laws in place that make that illegal?
But you can't put the risk there. The risk there is...
It is like saying ban all cars, because as we just heard in Helen Hoddenot's report, some people drive cars in the most irresponsible way and, tragically, take lives. So let's ban all... Let's ban all cars.
But that's ridiculous. We're not suggesting that people can't ride horses. People can ride horses.
Right. I don't know whether you've lived in the country, but it is very much part of the sort of country tradition. What are they going to ride? They're just going to go riding, chasing, doing nothing, not chasing a trail or anything.
Yes, of course they can ride. We're not suggesting nobody can ride.
What are the dogs going to do?
Okay, I mean, this is very interesting, Nick, because what you probably don't realise is those dogs are bred to hunt, and when they lose the scent for hunting, they are shot. They have a very short life, and they are repeatedly bred. So if we stop trail hunting, we stop the breeding of hounds. There's no need to worry about the hounds.
But what about the existing hounds? There are thousands of dogs. What are we going to do with them?
There are many people in hunts who claim to love their dogs. They can take a dog...
No. There are thousands. So what will happen to those dogs?
Well, just as they would have been destroyed after a few years, that's probably what's going to happen in a few years.
So we destroy all the dogs? I'm not taking you for a steak supper now.
No, I think the issue is those people, if they genuinely care about those hounds, they'll find homes for them. The animal lovers community will find homes for those hounds. That's been offered already.
Helen, I have enjoyed our conversation. Look after yourself. I look forward to speaking to you again. Have a good one if you celebrate. Christmas coming up after the news. No way back for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor unless he was to go to the US and actually face his accusers and face down the allegations, all of which he denies. Marina Lacerda was abused by the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein when she was 14. So what are the release of these files?
There is nothing there that is transparent. So it's very sad. It's very disappointing. It's a slap in our faces at this point.
That's the reaction there. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The 8.30 news is read by Dominic Ellis.
The government is reportedly considering copying Australia to ban social media for under-16s. Sir Keir Starmer previously ruled out the move, but a government spokesperson has now told LBC nothing is off the table. Australian police claim the gunmen accused of the Bondi Beach shooting last week threw undetonated homemade bombs at the crowd. Court documents submitted by officers also claim the pair carried out shooting practice in the countryside days before the attack. And resident doctors in England are returning to work after 5 days of strike action over pay and jobs. Health experts have warned, though, that the impact of the walkout will be felt into the new year and beyond. LBC weather dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last, subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, there are no 8.35 is the time. There were no shortage of allegations over the weekend, were there, in various worlds? We were talking about David Williams in the first hour. And then, of course, we learned more about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor with the so-called Epstein Files. A photograph of a spitting image puppet of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor that he allegedly used to grope Virginia Giuffre, published in those files. The doll can be seen propped up on a sofa in the background of a picture that shows convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell posing in Jeffrey Epstein's mansion in New York. Maxwell, of course, was jailed for 20 years in 2022 for helping the dead paedophile abuse young girls. On Friday, the US Department of Justice released more than 13,000 files concerning Epstein. It's alleged Mountbatten Windsor, who was stripped of his British Royal title this year, used the puppet of himself from Spitting Image to grope Miss Giuffre, who was then 17, as well as Johanna Schoberg, then 21, in the study of Epstein's home. Giuffre has claimed she was forced to have sex with Mountbatten Windsor on three occasions. He denies all allegations. Robert Johnson wrote The Windsor Legacy and has written Sex, Toys and Shotguns, What Happened When Andrew Invited Epstein to Shooting at Sandringham for the Daily Telegraph this weekend, and joins me. This is almost an inner sanctum. The room in which Andrew is photographed laying across the lap of a number of young women with his face almost against one of their bare legs is a sort of inner sanctum, isn't it, Rob? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, obviously, you know, the late Queen used to enjoy celebrating Christmas there. In fact, when that was taken a few weeks later, she would have hosted her family for Christmas. It's where George VI died. It's where the Queen would go every year to, you know, to remember her accession to the throne. It's in the sanctum. Yet he turned it into a royal version of a Playboy mansion, having, as I wrote in the Telegraph this and in the book, about all these these sort of party bags he was giving out to guests at this so-called Sandringham, just a straightforward shooting party, as he called it, this 39th birthday party for Ghislaine Maxwell, which caused a bit of a shock amongst all the staff. They're normally putting all the soaps and the shampoos out. They were putting out poppers and various other things, but you know, which was a bit of a strange one, I'm sure.
Yes, I read your piece. Up. It was poppers, lubricants, and condoms. Let's leave it there.
I was going to wait for you to say that.
Yes, indeed. I know. I saw the piece. The Windsor Legacy, the book you wrote. Did anything shock you from the Epstein files over the weekend, Rob?
Well, I think that it's been a drip, hasn't it? With, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts for him, for Andrew. No, because all these allegations have been put out there by Virginia Giuffre and others, are not substantiated. He does deny them. Mm. But look, there's this invitation to go to speak to Congress, isn't there? There's this invitation to go and put his side of the story. He's always saying he's innocent. He said he was going to clear his name before paying the £12 million, allegedly, to Giuffre, the sad lady who killed herself eventually. Look, nothing can really shock you, but I think the royal family clearly knew what was coming and distanced themselves as much as they could before it came out.
Yeah, clearly we learn a bit more now behind the King's action. Don't know if you had an opportunity to see The Sun yet this morning. It is reporting that Princess Beatrice will stay away from her father this Christmas. She's going on a skiing holiday to avoid embarrassment. I mean, he's even got a split within his own family now then, does he, Rob?
Inevitably, I think, Nick. I mean, the reality is he was at the recent christening of his grandchild, but I mean, he actually, the facts haven't really changed. I mean, the reality of a lot of the information that is coming out now was, he was already in the public domain. It just seems a very long time for the royal family to have woken up to this. I know that Prince William was very much pushing for these sanctions against his uncle. The reality is he won't want to have Andrew continually on the scene when he is king, and I think they need to try and deal with it now. But how do you deal with it? The reality is he's got to, if he wants to go and give evidence, and that might be a way of clearing his name, but there's absolutely no chance that that's going to happen. He hasn't even responded to it, and he won't drop himself any further. He's not particularly good when he's under interrogation, as we saw when he was just interviewed by Emily Maitlis. I think being under, being investigated or being questioned by a senior members of Congress, I think he might fall apart.
Rob, thanks. Robert Jobson wrote The Windsor Legacy, and that piece over the weekend, of course, I'll just say it one last time, Andrew Mountbatten. Windsor denies the allegations, but as Rob rightly says, I don't think he'll be getting on an aircraft to the US anytime soon. Let's come back to events in the UK. 8:40 is the time, 20 minutes before 9, and we're talking about the possibility of trail hunting being banned. Now, Robert, Nick, you're a lover of fox hunting, you are a disgrace. I don't know how many blind times do I have to say, it is trail hunting, Robert, that we are discussing. Trail hunting. Sandy and Amersham, don't be naive, I'd give you more credit, but they are still hunting. It is just a cover. Well, that is against the law. What more can you do, Sandy? Sonia's in Diss. Sonia, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Yeah, where I used to live, the hunt would come straight past us and our house. Mm. And I had a couple of sheep, pet sheep and chickens and horses.
What sort of sheep did you have?
Oh, one's a little Jacob's cross. Soe cross. Yeah, little one with Sybil.
That is unbelievable. We had two types of sheep. We had Jacob's and Soe's. That is incredible. Oh. Yours is a Jacob's. So did it need to be sheared or not?
Yes, yeah. Her,
you know Soe's don't need to be sheared. Did you know that?
I don't know.
No, I do. The little brown sheep, because they live on up in the wild island, and they sort of work off the fleece. They leave it on brambles and twigs and things like that, so the shepherds have to go around and collect the wool. So you never ever shear. You never shear a soe.
Oh well, I used to have mine sheared, but anyway.
Anyway, so you've got a Jacob
soe
cross.
And her daughter was just a mishmash cross, Phoebe. So I had those two, and I also had some turkeys, chickens, that sort of thing, and my two horses. And they used to come straight next to the house, and I would have to have my horse sedated. I'd have to get her sedated every time. She was so terrified of all the horns and the people on horseback screaming and the hounds screaming. And she used to absolutely... to be sweating and running around awful, and I had to shut my sheep in and I had to shut the chickens in because the hounds, I had 3 acres of woodland, used to run through the woodland quite frequently and through the land, and it absolutely terrifying.
I'm desperately sorry to hear that, but I mean, you could say that about motorbikes. Motorbikes frighten horses if they ride them too loud or they decide
The motorbike's not going to come through my land, are they?
Well, no, they're not going to come through your... I'm so sorry, not going to come through your land, but I thought you said they also... when they rode past on the road as well, they used to frighten your horse, no?
Well, yes. It's exciting horses, but also the whole thing used to frighten my particular pony. But the hounds would just be loose. So they would just run everywhere and through people's gardens. And I'd have to have a day off work so that I could be there to look after all my animals. And the horses were actually in a field opposite, so I couldn't be in two places at once. And I had donkeys. The donkeys had to be in the barn because donkeys would actually kill dogs if they get in with them. They're like...
Donkeys would kill...
Yes, they use...
Donkeys are the most docile... I also bred donkeys. extraordinary. You've got Jacob's sheep, Soway sheep, donkey... You didn't keep chicken as well, did you? Rhode Island Reds. I mean, where's this going to end?
No, I had various chickens.
You have got chickens in Rhode Island, okay.
No, not anymore, no. They use donkeys to keep coyotes away from sheep. Because they're really good at guarding sheep. So,
don't you mean llama?
Donkeys. I mean, not in this country, obviously.
No. I think we're losing the... I mean, I kept more than 20 donkeys down the years, and there was one who got a bit angry if we didn't feed him. His name was Brian. He was big and pink, so we called him Brian. I don't know why. But they don't have much of a temper on them, donkeys, do they?
Well, we were looking after a friend's dog, and the dog followed me out to the paddock. Next thing I knew, it's been pummeled between the feet of one of the donkeys, and they were all going after it, so we had to get it out quick.
All right. Sonia, thank you for your recollections. The line is a bit scratchy. Have a great Christmas. It's gone completely. She can't even hear me. Have a happy Christmas. Janet is in the West Country. That's all we're going to say. Janet, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Well, I'm afraid I've always been a big fan of yours, but there is a but.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. So, it's just that you are really out of touch. You sound like me 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
Who was saying, oh, you know, we can't get rid of hunting. It's a whole industry. All those, you know, horses, animals, they all love their animals. It is. However, what they've done is they've done it to themselves. You haven't seen the footage. Clearly, you've never looked at the footage. I've lived in Surrey. I used to live on an estate. A hunt used to come through. I used to literally see the fox go through, and I would stop the thugs, the posh thugs on the quad bikes that follow them and protect them, and I would say that to them. And honestly, I had to lock my car door and shut the windows. They're so aggressive.
I'm not seeking to defend that for a moment, Janet. Of course
I'm not. I know you're not, but what you don't understand is they are using it. They are using it as a smokescreen. There is such a thing as a clean hunt. And that is, I know there's one in the New Forest. And if they managed it so that if they trail hunted and they caught the fox trail, they stopped it and said, no, come back. You know, let's redress this. Take 10 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever, and then start again, get on the right trail. But they don't. And they just carry on. And then they rip the fox after hours and hours of changing it. And that's what you're missing. Go and look at the footage. That right. I'm not part of any hunt group. I live near a hunt now in Devon. Mm-hmm. And that's... But they are aggressive. God forbid you should ever cross them and challenge them to say that they are doing that.
I'm glad you accept that I wouldn't seek to defend that. I'm sorry we don't agree on this one. Let's finish there. I absolutely respect your position. And it's been a long time since I've lived in the countryside. Many, many years. Maybe I'm a little out of tune. Have a safe day. Thank you. 8:46, coming up after the news. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Perhaps Posh Spice would just like to be able to speak with her son as the feud gets deeper. We'll look at that. It's 8:46 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is reportedly considering copying Australia to ban social media for under-16s. Australian police claim the gunmen accused of the Bondi Beach shooting last week threw undetonated homemade bombs at crowds before the attack. And health experts in England are warning the impact of the resident doctor walkout will be felt into the new year and beyond. LBC weather dry and bright for most. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's stop-start on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions to Catford Station. That's because of some emergency repairs where temporary lights are in place. It's heavy in Maldon Rushett on the A243 Kingston Road in both directions to the Star Inn. That's because of emergency repairs. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the entire Northern Line after overnight engineering works finished late. Colindale Station on the Northern Line is closed in preparation for the opening of the new ticket hall early this afternoon. On the trains, Southern and Gatwick Express are running a reduced service at Victoria because of a festive timetable change. Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hertford East after flooding, and there's disruption to a number of TfL bus routes in South West, West and North West London today. That's because of a strike.
This is LBC.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing, glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glaze with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favourite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, The Cosmetics Company Store and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dope like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a doze bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 9 the time. Brian's in Rayleigh talking about trail hunting. I remind you, not fox hunting, trail hunting. Your view. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. As a matter of interest, they do more or less trail hunting in America, United States and Canada.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and but they don't. They have fox hunting. They got fox hunting packs and all that stuff. But they don't appear to kill the fox. That's not the main idea.
I think once hounds take after a fox, you're not going to stop it. I don't think, Brian. In all honesty.
This is what I know. I mean, somebody who lives in the States may know more about it than I do. Hmm. But there are fox. There's fox hunting also in Ireland, Australia, and France.
Okay, Brian. But I'm not trying to support fox hunting, Brian. Of course,
is this? Oh, it's just that somebody said it only happens in the UK. That's not true.
I see. So, again, whereabouts in France do they do it?
I don't know, but apparently they've got 32 packs for the hunting of foxes in France.
Okay, all right, Brian, thank you for that. As you speak, Paul says fox hunting is a barbaric, cruel practice. It's not a sport, it's a sadistic pleasure for sick people. I would not get on a horse and chase these I would like to get on a horse and chase these vile vermin with a pack of lions. Okay, well, let's calm down a little bit. Paul, I understand that Brian just talked about fox hunting, but it is trail hunting. Simon in Gravesend, I see more dead squished foxes by the side of the A2 than are killed by trail hunts each year. Well, then, yes, we should probably ban lorries and cars, then, because that, unfortunately, kills foxes. Murdo's in Ochtamachty. Murdo, you're going to tell me good morning.
Tally-ho, Nick. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho,
yep.
Tally-ho. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, it's funny, all these people phoning in, complaining about drag hunting, these are the same people that laughed when Fenton the dog hunted out of control in Hyde Park and chased the deer. Now, that they should have been... And, well, I don't know if the owner of Fenton realised he was in breach of the Wild Mammals Act, but yep. This, Nick, has got nothing to do with trail hunting. It's all, again, the politics of envy. These people don't care about foxes. They just don't like people like you and I going around wearing red coats with a riding hat and the horseback. That's all this is about, just another kick at the perception of wealth and class.
Well, I don't actually hunt. Do you actually hunt then, Murdo?
No, but we support the hunt. Well, the fife hunt is no more, so
right.
we still deal with foxes, but in a more effective way now. The hunting never killed a lot of foxes. It was just an old tradition that if that was the only means of controlling foxes, the place would overrun foxes, sadly.
Well, it is. I mean, we have extraordinary problems in cities now with urban foxes, of course, Murdo.
Yeah, correct, because we're quite hard on them on the countryside, so they've all moved to the town. I'm not going to say beside all the other vermin, I'll leave that for people.
Just leave it with the foxes. Murdo, have a good one. Thank you for that. Jenny Beer, I'm a Reform UK member, but I part company with Nigel Farage on the question of fox and drag hunting. The man, one of your callers, makes a lot of sense. Why can't they adopt the idea? The idea there being that you chase a rag that has not got any animal scent on. That's called drag racing. Because obviously, unfortunately, at the moment, it does have animal scent. Even people suggesting sometimes they take, I don't quite know how they get it, but they say fox urine. I don't know how you get a fox to urinate on a rag. I've no idea. But then obviously, then if they do get the whiff of a fox as the pack is rampaging across a field, unfortunately, they're likely to possibly round on it. Chris in Blandford. Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes, the point you'd like to make.
We live in our 400-acre estate, and the landowner there won't allow hunting of any kind, whether it be with rifles, with foxes. And there's nothing more intimidating than a pack of hounds that breach the garden and come in. And I think this is one where clearly the trail hunting, using the fox urine, training the animals to trail on something that is an animal scent, just leaves too much leeway, which is why prosecutions are difficult. We've seen in Dorset with hunt masters explaining how to circumvent the legislation. So is it a perfect system? No, I don't think it is. And I think, unfortunately, there are a minority, and I think it is a minority, that spoil it for the majority.
So is the government right to move to try and ban it then?
I think there needs to be some greater controls for it. I'm not quite sure that it needs to be banned completely. I think it's one of those ones that there are gaps in the legislation. I think it was poorly written and poorly worded when it first came in, and it's left too many loopholes that are too easy to exploit.
It's quite interesting, and if you were to read Tony Blair's autobiography, his biggest domestic regret was devoting 700 hours to fox hunting. I just wonder why possibly this Labour government might be going down the same path. It seems puzzling.
I think it's a very emotive subject, unfortunately. I don't think you can ever use the argument that fox hunting, I think, you know, the population do need to be controlled, and this is a sport. But I say, to try and find a way that legislatively is right, I think there's too many arguments on both sides, which just occupy things that I don't think necessarily are a priority for the country.
Lastly, is it a class war thing here?
I don't think it is. I think there's various classes that are involved in hunting, from the farriers to the landowners, to the people that support and the people who are against it. So.
Chris, thank you. David in Hastings. David, your reaction to this possible change in the law? Good morning.
It's a good thing.
Why?
Because foxes deserve to live their lives now.
Yes, it's not fox hunting. I'll try again. It's not fox hunting that we are discussing, of course. It's trail hunting. And they're probably, as we just heard from Chris, who I think probably made a good point, we probably need to look at better legislation, something such as that.
But the police have got far too much to do. They haven't got the resources to follow these hunts.
Well, we heard that there have been 250,000 hunting days since this legislation was passed, and only a handful of cases. Now, that either supports your argument that they've got other jobs to do, or the other argument from people who support trail hunting, that there isn't that much of this abuse going on. And I say again, I'm not seeking to defend that abuse for one moment. I think you've got a bad... I don't know whether you can hear me. Pardon?
You're concerned about the farriers. In the past, you said to people...
Yeah, I think a lot of people... Yes, a lot of people lose their jobs, yes. And indeed, the people who look after the hounds. I was going to say houndsmen, but I'm sure there are houndswomen as well.
You said to people in the past, just get a new job.
Right. When did I say get a new job? Sorry. When have I said that, sir?
I've listened to you for years, and you've told people when they've not... had good jobs, they should go and get another job, a better paid job.
Can you remind me when I said that?
Years ago.
Okay. It's not the best of lines, and we're battling a little bit. If I once told someone to get a better job, I don't recall doing that. I mean, I do get rather angry about people like tube drivers who decide they can't drive a tube for £1,000 a week or whatever it might be. I can't remember telling someone to go and get another job. I'm sure you're probably right. But maybe that was an individual and not the hundreds of people of the farriers and the huntsmen and women, as I say, who are affected. David, I will leave it. I'm sorry, it's not a great line, so I don't think we're really going to be able to make much more progress on that, but thank you for that. Paul says fox hunting is barbaric, cruel practice. Oh, it's not fox hunting, it's trail hunting. That's not even going to try and read that one. In fact, let's move on, because then all of them come in talking about fox hunting. No one is trying to defend fox hunting. That has gone. Coming up after the news, the importance of learning languages.
Entschuldigen Sie, einen Kaffee bitte.
That, of course, I know you won't need translated. Excuse me, can I have a coffee? We hear that the number of pupils taking languages has declined drastically. Plus, shoplifters are getting away with stealing something every minute now. What's that going to be like in the pre-Christmas rush? And...
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
And I wouldn't mind being able to speak to my son Brooklyn, unfortunately, the Beckham route. News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Prime Minister is reportedly considering an Australian-style ban on social media for children under the age of 16. Canberra brought in the law earlier this month, which applies to platforms including Instagram and Snapchat. The government's now told LBC that nothing is off the table when it comes to keeping young people safe online. That appears to be a shift from when the Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy spoke to Nick earlier this month.
We're following it really closely, but in this National Youth Strategy, we heard from over 14,000 young people in this country, and we very specifically talked to them about their experiences of social media. They were really concerned that if you introduced a blanket ban, not only would it be very difficult to make that work, it might push young people into other parts of the internet that are unregulated.
Australian police have alleged two men accused of the shooting at Bondi Beach last week carried out firearms training ahead of the attack. Court documents submitted by officers also claim that the pair threw explosives into the crowd, but they didn't detonate. One gunman was shot dead by police. Another man is facing 15 murder charges. One of Russia's most senior generals has been killed in an explosion in Moscow this morning. Officials say it was a car bomb. Vinil Sararov was the head of operational training for the armed forces. The government is setting out what it says is the most ambitious animal welfare strategy in a generation. Under the plans, puppy farming and trail hunting are set to be banned in England and Wales. Critics are concerned it's being used as a cover to chase live foxes, which has been illegal since 2004. But Polly Portwin, who's from the Countryside Alliance, says the majority of hunters do stick to the law.
There are always people at bad eggs or in all walks of life, but actually there is a regulatory body and a governing body called the British Hound Sports Association, and they can exclude hunts and they can ban people from taking part if they are deemed to be breaking the law.
And resident doctors in England have returned to work this morning following their five-day strike over pay and jobs. But the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned that NHS services will take time to catch up. He's thanked staff for keeping the health service running during what he's called the double whammy of flu cases and industrial action. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 30 at 98.67. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, the LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine on Monday, December the 22nd. Not learning foreign languages is stupid and needs to be addressed. So says Larry Lamb. Yes, Larry Lamb used to appear on here. He's going to be the face of a new Festival of Languages in London next summer, organised by the British Council. And he's pointed out the idiocy of the policy that we don't now, that by mandatory, have lessons in foreign languages in our schools, and there's been a massive drop-off in children learning French, German, not so bad in Spanish. I'll be asking you, what languages have you learnt, and indeed, how have they helped you? In other news, in the pre-Christmas rush, it's probably going to get worse, but shoplifters are getting away with stealing something every minute in this appalling epidemic. Why is it that, unfortunately, they can't friend it like Beckham? There seems to be a rift of family division there. We'll give you the details of that. And the council urged to leave the market's pigeons in peace. So what do the good folk of Norwich make of that story?
You do feel sorry for some of the storeholders, like, and then when the pigeons are all over their clothes and their phones.
Yes, the music for Where Eagles Dare, but it's Where Pigeons Safely Roost. And we'll come to that later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I mentioned earlier, the great Larry Lamb will be the face of a new Festival of Languages in London next summer, organised by the British Council. He said he believes he would not have achieved the success he has without being able to speak foreign languages. He's quite a bright fellow. He speaks both French and German. He's critical of the government for allowing pupils to drop language learning at 14 rather than compelling them to study French, German or Spanish to GCSE level. This would kill off languages for working class pupils, he said. Speaking from his home, he tells the Times newspaper, "We have this foolish attitude that we are the language of the world. It's complacent, stupid and small-minded and leads to other countries thinking we're getting too big for our boots. But the only reason people speak English is because of the US, not because of us. Within the UK state education system, you're permitted to drop a foreign language at 14. It's so short-sighted." Now, the newspaper's done some background. The number of pupils taking foreign languages has plummeted at GCSE in the two decades since they became optional. Spanish is doing okay, though. Schools were pressured to encourage as many teenagers as possible to take a language as part of the what's called EBAC, or English Baccalaureate. These were reforms introduced by Michael Gove, but only half did so this summer. And the EBAC was recently scrapped by the government after a year-long review of the curriculum. Pupils will instead be expected to take a wide range of GCSE subjects, including at least two from the humanities, languages or arts. So how important are languages? Well, Sophia Smith-Gaylor is a journalist and author of the forthcoming book, How to Kill a Language, which is coming out in next year, and joins me now. Why do you believe languages, knowledge of language, to be so important? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. They offer innumerable benefits not only to us but to society at large. If you look at all of the benefits that bilingualism, multilingualism can offer a child well through into their adult years, There are countless. They're probably going to earn more money. It boosts tasks associated with executive function. If you are able to maintain that bilingualism throughout your life, you give yourself cognitive protection against dementia. If you then go a bit macro and look at society more widely, you can look at research that was done for government a few years ago that thinks that us not learning enough languages as a society costs the UK economy about £48 billion.
How can we get to that figure, Sophia?
How can we get there?
Yeah, how do we get to that figure, just out of interest?
Well, it's helpful that you pointed out the drop in language GCSE take-up. If we reflect back to, for example, the figures in 97, 98, when language GCSEs were compulsory, we had about 73% of boys and 82% of girls entering for modern languages GCSEs in that period. So when you do make it compulsory, more people do it. Language GCSEs are some of the most harshly marked GCSEs in the curriculum.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So, yes, so you're sort of disincentivizing teenagers to do it if they know it's going to be a harder time getting a high grade in this than in others. I also think we have to see more Larry Lambs. We have to see more high-profile figures speaking about the benefits, the pleasures and the joys that come with multilingualism. Because if you don't see multilingualism in practice and the benefits that it offers, you aren't going to perceive a need for it. And we know it's need that drives people to learn languages.
Can we talk a little bit about you? Might I ask if you're able to speak any other languages than English?
Yes. So I loved learning languages as a teenager. I relate a lot to what Larry Lamb said about inspiring teachers that showed him it was possible. I studied Spanish and Arabic at university, and I'm a heritage speaker of Italian as well, because my mum's Italian.
Did you grow up with a lot of Italian being spoken in your house?
I did, but I was it was spoken around me, but I never learned to speak it. Something called receptive bilingualism, when you're exposed to a language. But I didn't have Italian lessons at school. Italian GCSEs, Italian lessons are only offered in about 1% of schools. So it's actually as an adult that I've gotten a lot better at it and pursued it. Learning Spanish and Arabic gave me the confidence to improve my Italian.
How much of a challenge is learning, and obviously writing, Arabic?
Oh, you know what? Learning to write and the alphabet takes you about 2 weeks. It takes you not as long as you'd think.
Really?
But the most of the challenges, for me at least, were pronunciation, grammar, and the fact that there are actually many Arabics. Someone in Lebanon, which is where I studied, speaks Arabic very differently to someone in Morocco.
Well, now, it's so interesting you would mention Morocco, because one very, very close friend of mine is Moroccan, and he will say that if you'll speak to someone, say, from Saudi, that they struggle to actually... They do understand each other, but it's really, really almost speaking different languages.
Absolutely. Morocco is famous for a Darija, that's what it's called. The local language variety is very, very distinctive,
right.
And it's very impressive if a non-native speaker can speak Darija for sure.
Okay. We've just been speaking, Sophia, about the possibility of trail hunting being banned, and the point made there is that it might be a bit of class war in effect here. Do you think there's a class gap here, in that I was very fortunate enough to study languages at my school? Indeed, I studied two languages, but I went to a private school. Is there an issue with state schools, do you think?
I don't think there's a gap. I know that there's a gap.
Oh, right.
So in 2021, research was done, and they found that the percentage of Year 11 pupils who were studying a language was 20% points lower in poorer areas versus affluent ones.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, we also know it's been very difficult for the government to recruit language teachers. So there is definitely a gap, and it is a problem if, once again, like centuries ago, learning languages becomes a preserve of the elite and not something that's accessible to everybody. It should be something we should be very worried about.
Lastly, tell me a little bit about this book then, How to Kill a Language. What's the theme of that, Sophia?
I've spent about 3 years charting linguicide, or language loss, the phenomenon of losing language diversity around the world. There are lots of endangered languages around the world, including the one in my family, which was from Piacenza in the north of Italy, a million highly endangered, and also looks at language loss in diaspora, looking at how in a country like our own, where you've got political figures with quite glottophobic attitudes, that means sort of xenophobic, but about languages or accents, really devaluing multilingualism and learning lots of different languages, and meaning sort of as a culture, we move towards monolingualism. It's not a good thing. And it means lots of us are losing our links to our heritage, our culture, our memory.
Sophia, thank you for your time. Sophia Smith-Gaylor is a journalist and obviously an author. The book How to Kill a Language comes out in May of 2026. Thanks, Sophia. Let's pick up on your stories now. Kate joins me from the great land of Switzerland, from Bern. Kate, good morning. What are you going to tell me?
Hello, Nick. Thanks so much for having me on. Good to speak to you.
Good to speak to you. How's Switzerland this morning? Brisk.
It's good. Yeah. Very foggy where I am.
Oh, is it?
No snow.
Did we have a vote or anything yesterday? Was there any referendum or anything yesterday?
No, there wasn't.
That makes
sense. I think there was one like 3 weeks ago.
There would have been. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Kate, what are you going to tell me?
If I hadn't learned languages, I wouldn't be able to listen to LBC or speak to you now. So I think that's pretty great.
Give me the background to that then. How did that help?
So generally, I grew up in a multilingual country. So we start learning another language very early on in school.
You were born in Switzerland.
I was born in Switzerland. I lived there all my life. I learned English. I started learning English from seventh grade.
Right.
I just basically never stopped. But I think it sounds a bit cheesy, you know, but I think that learning other languages really does open doors to other cultures and broadens your horizon, because it teaches you to look at the world in different ways. Simply because grammars can be so different, or the vocabulary can be very different, and it teaches you a lot. And one thing that I also wanted to mention, based on what your previous guest said, it's not just schools where you can learn languages nowadays. When I grew up, it was very limited. You had to learn in schools, basically. Are you still there?
Yes. Kate, go ahead.
And nowadays, the possibilities to learn a language are so much, so much more diverse.
Was English spoken in your house?
No.
As a child?
My God.
Did you spend a gap year here or something? You must have.
No.
Your English is incredible.
Like, actually, listening to LBC helps a lot, especially with accent, I think. But no, I only started going on holidays in the UK about 3-ish years ago, and I spent maybe a month there per year.
Now, of course, living in Switzerland, there's every likelihood that you've got German. You've probably got Italian and French as well, have you?
Yes, yeah.
And English?
Yes.
And have you got Spanish as well? I don't know.
I did start learning. I dabbled in a few languages. I speak a fair bit of Russian, some Swedish. For example, like Swedish is one of the things that I learned online. So I got the course book from my library, joined a Discord server, and went through that with a native speaker. And basically, I can have a conversation in basic Swedish.
This is incredible. What do you do for a living?
I used to work as a teacher until very recently, English teacher and a librarian. Wow. I'm still a librarian.
How lucky your pupils were to have you. Kate, do stay in touch. I have enjoyed our conversation. Enjoy Bern. Oh, it's gone. I'm trying to wish you a happy Christmas in German. It's gone. Weihnacht. Fröhliche Weihnacht, yeah? Yes, Fröhliche Weihnacht.
Thanks to you.
Oh, yeah. Why did Weihnacht go? I could have done Joyeux Noël. She's in Bern, so that wouldn't have worked. Bern's in the German part, so she's trying. Thank Kate. Talk soon. Janet, I'm bilingual French since I was 21. Oh, I should have said seventh grade, by the way. I realised that's about 12 or 13 for Kate there. Janet, I'm bilingual French since I was 21. It enabled me to get a teaching assistantship in Quebec, build a house in France, and swear at the builders when necessary. I'm 74. For 6 months, I've been learning Spanish and Portuguese at the same time as going to South America in January. Well, they do say, don't they, that as you get a little bit older, and I'm not saying you're old for a moment, it is important to do something that stretches your brain, whether it's learning a language in your case, or, I don't know, what's that called, Wordle, or I don't know, crosswords or anything like that. Try and keep it going. Thank you for that. Peter, going to speak to you about languages and more of you. And then, coming up later in this hour,
Mama, I love you. Mama, I care.
Yeah, not sure that Brooklyn can sing that currently to his posh Spice Girl mum. We'll look at that in more detail. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is reportedly considering copying Australia to ban social media for under-16s. Australian police claim the gunmen accused of the Bondi Beach shooting last week threw undetonated homemade bombs at crowds before the attack. And health experts in England are warning the impact of the resident doctor walkout will be felt into the new year and beyond. LBC weather dry and bright for most. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's stop-start on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions to Catford Station because of some emergency repairs, so traffic is taking it in turns to get past. In Maldon Rushett, it's slow on the A243 Kingston Road in both directions to the Star Inn. That's because of emergency repairs. On the Tube, there are now minor delays on the entire Northern Line after engineering works overran earlier. Collindale Station on the Northern Line is closed in preparation for the opening of the new ticket hall early this afternoon. On the trains, Southern and Gatwick Express are running a reduced service at Victoria because of festive timetable changes. Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hertford East. That's after the flooding. And there's disruption to a number of TfL bus routes in South West, West and North West London today because of a strike.
This is LBC.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glazed with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You've arrived. Your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Waitrose presents.
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
Oh, there you are.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's catch up with more of your stories about languages. Peter in Lincoln, and it's German, is that right? Good morning. Guten Tag.
I couldn't talk to mine here.
Tell me how you learned German.
Well, from my maternal grandfather. He was from Central Europe.
Right.
And so the language was around in the family when I, as I was growing up.
How wonderful.
But it was, yeah, and a bit of Yiddish, and, you know, it was so... There was always a foreign language being spoken around me, a bit of Polish maybe sometimes.
Gosh. And, of course, as a kid, you're soaking it up. This is what you don't realise, don't you?
Well, that's right, and you don't lose it. The tone stays with you.
And did you ever use that for an employment, or is it just a sort of life skill that you've had and you like to travel?
No, it was a life skill, and it was something which, when my children, they all learnt German. My eldest daughter, she went to university in Germany, for example. She married a German. She brought her children up in France.
Yep.
They're totally trilingual. Why not? Wherever they go in the world, they'll be able to speak.
Brilliant.
And I moved to France when I retired. I became fluent in French, took out French nationality, which I'm very proud of.
How did you get French nationality? Are you able to just say, I want to be French, then?
Oh, no, you've got it's a very testing process.
No, what I say is, what qualifies you? Do you have to be a property owner? How does it work?
No, you have to have lived there for so many years.
I see.
And that varies according to when you apply
right.
and to what your circumstances are. You have to prove that you are fluent in French, that you, well, you're level B2, you have to prove you can speak.
Right.
You have to prove that you're no burden on the state, you've got a certain income.
Cautious,
and the important thing is that you have tried to integrate by becoming by participating in local groups in the community. And
whereabouts in other, France do you live? Or?
Well, not far from Toulouse.
Okay, and you took part in local groups, did you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I was a co-founder of a local heritage group,
right.
and we produced various documents, various pamphlets about the local heritage in French.
How interesting.
I really enjoyed it.
Larry Lamb, who has got this piece in the Times today, says there can be almost a sort of degree of arrogance with English people in that they expect the whole world to understand what they're speaking, so they go anywhere in Europe and just basically speak in a loud voice and expect everything to happen. Is that fair, what Larry's saying?
It certainly is. I know people, mainly men, actually, in France, who have made no attempt to learn the language. No. And they're living there, they made no attempt, and that to me is not acceptable.
No.
If you live in a country,
rude.
You learn the language.
Yeah.
It's simple. Or you do your best to learn the language, you know?
Yeah, of course. Auf Wiederhören, Peter. Danke schön.
Auf Wiederhören.
Yep. We'll talk again soon, hear from you again soon. Thank you very much, Rick Wielen, Duncan, Peter. Pete in Birmingham. Oh, from Peter to Pete. Pete, tell me. Now, this is your work, is it? Tell me what that's about.
Yeah. Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I just want to say I'm a new listener to the station. What a fantastic and engaging station that you...
thank you.
You know, that you have. So
oh, great.
Really
I'll
work.
Tell my colleagues. Thank you so much.
Superb. So, yeah, I work for a business in the Midlands, and
yep.
We hire out in Vietnam, and we also hire out in Pakistan. And
you
there's a couple of...
Sorry,
here.
Hire out what staff, you mean?
Yes, staff.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I think there's a couple of points here. So, when the staff are actually working from Pakistan, they speak very, very good English. They have an American accent, which is quite common. I'm not sure why. But the thing is, they're contributing by being able to speak in another language to our economy by supporting this British business. So, that's one angle. Now, the other thing is, me working in the UK and working with these individuals that are out abroad helps me to be able to do my job really, really well. Because I also speak their language. So I can actually have a closer bond with them, although I've never really met them face-to-face, because I speak the same language as them. And the other side to that is Pete's not my real name, by the way. It's an alias I've given you. But,
okay.
You know, I'm actually of Sikh origin. And the other side to this is that when I have family that's actually abroad, or if they're here and they don't really speak much English, it also allows me to be able to have such a fantastic bond with them people.
Right.
And I think it just contributes so massively to the quality of life that you have if you speak another language.
If you have children, are they learning it? Or when you have children, how important will languages be for them?
Absolutely imperative, because I've got three young children. I've got two twin daughters that are 1 year old, and I've got a son who's four. And, you know, being able to speak to them in another language is so important for me, because I know what it's done for me. You know, I'm able to conversate with elder people in my family who aren't really English speakers, and I can have a real relationship with them, and, you know, I can have a laugh with them, I can have a joke with them, and really build a lot of, you know, the love that we have for each other, because we can communicate properly to one another. And I think if you don't speak another language, you really don't know what you're missing out on until you do. Yeah, and, you know, the fact that this country is... saying that it's not you can drop it at a certain age. I agree with your previous guest that, you know, why would people not drop it, especially if it's marked more harshly than other subjects?
I know.
You know,
that's right. That was a worry.
Is it a problem?
Pete, I have enjoyed our conversation. Good luck in your work, of course. Good luck with the family as well. And thank you for finding LBC. Be sure to tell your friends and hope you enjoy listening to us. And thanks for being a first-timer. Lee says, I love languages. I learned them because I was always fascinated by different countries and cultures. Languages gave me the opportunity to work and live in different countries. I taught languages in London. It was wonderful to see children enjoying Spanish. Now I speak Spanish, French, Italian, Flemish, Slovenian, and some Serbo-Croatian. I hope our children can continue with their languages. Ciao. That's Lee in Antwerp, in, he says, beautiful Belgium. Mo says, I speak three languages fluently. At home, we're teaching my son Persian, Arabic, Spanish, and obviously English, and he switches between them beautifully and maintains his language is English. He's 8. Your Moroccan friend probably speaks 5 languages, because a lot of my Moroccan friends can speak many languages. Yeah, he can, obviously he does Arabic, English, fluent in Italian, pretty good in French, virtually fluent in Spanish and Portuguese. Extraordinary. And can I certainly understand everything in all those languages. Tom, we're back to Switzerland, land of my fathers, literally. Tom is in Geneva. Good morning.
Yes, hi, Nick. Yes, I was just telling your colleague my kids are trilingual.
Your kids are... Okay, so we've got English and French. If you live in Geneva, I'm going to assume French, right? English, French.
Yeah, and Spanish.
Oh, and I was going to go for German or Italian because of Switzerland. Why Spanish, sir?
Because my wife is both Swiss German and Chilean, and they were born in Chile.
Your kids were born in Chile?
Yes, in Santiago,
See, because of their mum. I've got it now. So, hang on, how long have you been living in Geneva, Tom?
Oh, I came in 1970 at the age of 21.
No, I'm so sorry. How long have your children been living in Geneva?
Oh, all their lives. We never lived in Chile. They were only born there. We brought them back to Chile when they were 3 weeks old.
But that's why I'm surprised they haven't picked up some Italian or German, Tom.
Well, they can get by in Italian with French and Spanish. Of course they can.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but German, yes, her mother speaks German. Of course she does. She's Swiss German.
Their mother's... right, okay. So are they in work, your children? Or are they still at college? What's the story?
No. My daughter's 36, son's 35. They both work in the canton of Geneva.
And
very happily. Good jobs, both of them. Very lucky.
And are the languages helping them with that? Or not really in the work they do?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
My daughter couldn't have got... She works at Geneva University. Couldn't have got the job without being trilingual.
Lastly, is there an arrogance for some people... Is there an arrogance with some people who assume they can just speak English and get by anywhere in the world? Is there a degree of arrogance there?
Oh, yes. Yes, there is.
All right, the best of wishes to your family and to your daughters. Have a great Christmas over there in Switzerland. Alex is in Edinburgh. What language are you going to talk about, Alex? Good morning.
Hello, good morning. So I was brought up bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
My mum's from Slovenia, and I studied languages and linguistics. So I speak four languages fluently. I speak English, Slovene, German, and, well, technically Serbian and Croatian, but it's similar. Apart from Serbian, has a Cyrillic alphabet.
Right, okay.
And I would say that, I mean, I loved speaking languages. A country like Slovenia was bordering with Italy, Austria, Hungary, and Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common that people kind of speak multi... All my friends speak four or five languages, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it is dying out. I would say being married to a Scot, it's, you know, he's never really minded me speaking Slovene to our small children, but there is an element of, when you're referring to arrogance, there's an element of, family.
Do you think there is a bit of arrogance amongst some people, some, not all?
Well, his family are very, like, have said to me in the past, like, you know, we don't want you to speak Slovene around us. Even, like, if I'm near them, I would automatically speak Slovene to my kids. And they told me to stop speaking Slovene because it's not a useful language. And why don't I speak to them in German? Because, you know, I lived and worked in Germany. But my culture and my heritage is I'm half Slovenian, half Ukrainian. So I want to speak to my kids in Slovene. There are only 2 million Slovenian people.
Right.
But you're talking about arrogance. You know, they're like, well, it's not a useful language. But to me, that's the language is an entire part of your culture. And
totally agree with you. It's all interwoven. Alex, thank you. Fantastic languages you speak. Good point here from Ivan in Gantsill, who's texted. The callers to your show, Nick, speaking another language, illustrate how it helps people to get on. Why would certain politicians decry this? I don't know. I don't know why it is, Ivan, that almost every government comes in and decides to rip up where all the others have done in the field of education, and why we would make it a situation now where we, in some instances, as our commentator said, really heavily marked languages. There's no incentive to study them. It's just nuts. I agree with you. Coming up after the news, each day we go to Norwich. No, not for the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre, but rather... That's an Alan Partridge gag for anybody who watches it. Rather, Norwich Market. Each day at about 5 p.m, the usual hullabaloo of a market closing down is replaced by the sound of screams. It's as if it's Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, as pigeons swoop on patrons and, unfortunately, deliver a deluge of droppings. So they've brought in a falconer. What do the good folk of Norwich think of that?
I'd say for the stall holders, it's quite bad, because they put the stuff out and they spend half the day going around clearing pigeon mess up off it.
I've been couple of times. It's not very nice.
No,
people were sitting here eating as well.
Yes, LBC's hawkish reporter Henry Riley has gone where eagles dare. He'll file a report after this. 9:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
Australian police claim the gunmen accused of the Bondi Beach shooting last week threw undetonated homemade bombs at crowds. New court documents submitted by officers also claim that the pair carried out shooting practice in the countryside days before the attack. Resident doctors in England are returning to work after 5 days of strike action over pay and jobs, but health experts are warning that the impact of the walkout will be felt into the new year and beyond. And the government is reportedly considering copying Australia to ban social media for under-16s. Sir Keir Starmer previously ruled out the move, but a government spokesman has now told LBC that nothing is off the table. LBC weather dry and bright for most. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable, and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Ends 31st of the 12th.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And what better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's take a break from speaking languages and go, unfortunately, to a breakup in the family. Posh Spice with her colleagues in Happier Days, Mama by the Spice Girls. But now we learn that the feud in the family is getting even worse. Brooklyn Beckham blocking his family on social media when his mother, Victoria, liked a post of his about roasting a chicken. Confused? You should be. How are we going to find out what's going on? There's only one way at times like this to find out what's going on. You go to Katie Hine, consultant editor, showbiz at the Daily Mail. She effectively wrote Saturday's edition, as I recall it. There was page lead after page lead and full pages. And Katie joins me now. New listeners start here. Obviously, they know who the Beckhams are. How did this row break out, Katie? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Hi. So this row really culminated around David's 50th birthday in May. Since David and Nicola got together, I think Nicola and Victoria didn't exactly see eye to eye.
Do you mean Brooklyn? Brooklyn and Nicola, do you mean? You said David and Nicola.
Sorry, I meant Victoria and Nicola didn't see eye to eye.
Oh, Victoria and Nicola, right, okay.
Victoria and Nicola didn't see eye to eye.
I see, right, but so it's mum and soon-to-be daughter-in-law.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. And it kind of all, in lockdown, they got together shortly before lockdown, and Brooklyn went to America to spend, to be with Nicola, and I think there was kind of a divide at that point. Then there was the wedding, and there was sort of fallout around the wedding and whether Victoria was going to make her wedding dress, and she didn't. But then things got a lot better.
Ah.
And actually, Nicola was at Victoria's Paris fashion shows, and everything seemed to be mended. There were lots of, interviews about how they played, drinking games together.
Oh, good.
And then, so this was all very jolly. And then, David's 50th birthday was approaching. And they flew to the UK to be part of the various celebrations, of which this birthday went on for weeks. But they just didn't turn up at any of them.
Oh.
So at that point, David and Victoria were just, obviously completely bemused by all of this. And that's when it really all kicked off. So, since then, there's been no communication.
Oh, Lord.
I actually have to say, the only communication was on Instagram. Mm. So, I suppose this moment was going to happen at some point, that Brooklyn, David and Victoria would never, ever, ever block their son or unfollow him. Like, they are desperate. You know, their door's always open for him. And they've lost hope. They've lost hope of any reconciliation.
Oh, dear.
But I think where we are now is, I think, of course, like, you know, it's really ridiculous, isn't it, that Victoria liked to post and Brooklyn didn't, you know, take kindly to that.
No.
But I think what really is upsetting David and Victoria now is that their parents, Brooklyn's grandparents, you know, they're not getting any younger and they've not done anything wrong. You know, I think if Brooklyn and Nicola don't want to have any relationship with David and Victoria, they've kind of accepted that. But then you've got little Harper, who's an innocent 14-year-old here. So yes. I think particularly for the grandparents, it's going to be a really sad Christmas.
Well, I was going to say, they've got Chris. So presumably, son has not seen his father even after he was knighted.
No. So there was no congratulations. There was no contact. After, you know, before he was knighted, after it was announced, after the night, you know, I mean, David and Victoria, I think early on in this, kind of in the spring, tried to contact him. He made it very clear. I mean, the words used to me yesterday was, it's now complete estrangement from David and Victoria. So I just say they have got no hope of this ever getting any better.
What does Brooklyn do for a living, I mean?
Well, Brooklyn is an influencer, don't you know?
He's
a typical Gen Z influencer.
Right.
And he, so obviously we know he started, his first career was a photographer, then he went on to be a chef. And he's now kind of, he's got his hot sauce, which he named, which is called 23, Cloud 23, after his father's shirt at Real Madrid. Okay. So he's quite happy to use his connections to his, you know, to his parents, to his father. So he and Nicola seem to, I mean, not really do very much, really.
Read all about it in the Daily Mail. Katie, thank you as ever. Katie Hine, consultant editor Showbiz for the Mail, with all the background to that. I don't want to say this for a second. I don't want to say this, but sometimes, you know, it takes a death for this all to be sorted out, which is ridiculous. Somehow they've got to broker a peace, and clearly it's not. There's such distance between the two. If you've had situations like that in family, isn't that awful? Oh, dear. Shall we talk about something a little more upbeat? Mo's in Chelsea. How important are languages to you, Mo? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hope you're okay.
Good, thank you.
Languages are extremely important because, well, I'm Iranian originally, and I grew up in a part of Iran that's called East Azerbaijan. So my mother tongue is Turkish.
Ah,
so I grew up speaking Turkish and then went to school here, learned Persian, and so be it. Then in the UK, I married my wife, who's Arabic origin.
Right.
And so at home, my son is now 8. I speak Persian to him. My wife speaks Arabic to him. And we deliberately chose a nanny from Spain because we go to Spain a lot so that he could be my little translator when we go to the supermarket.
You know, you speak... I thought it was called Farsi. Have I got that wrong then? It's not called Farsi.
No, the Farsi, Persian, you know, you can call it whatever.
Oh, it's both the same. I see. So we've got Farsi and we've got Spanish. Obviously, you've got English. So your son's got...
And Arabic.
Wow.
So my wife speaks Arabic to him, and then, like, our nanny speaks Spanish. And probably English, obviously, when we're in the bath playing, he says, in my language, English, this is what we say. I said, all right, thanks very much for correcting me. So, and it's just nice to see him switching between the languages.
So he's 8 now. When he goes to secondary school, how keen are you, how keen will the boy be, on taking language to what might be GCSE or whatever they call those exams at that time, to that sort of examination level, do you think, Mo?
I think he's not going to have a choice. I'll beat him into it.
Well, of course you won't literally beat him into it, but you will do everything you can to encourage the boy to do it.
Of course. I think it would be, for him, I mean, look, top 5 languages in the world are English, Mandarin, Hindi, Spanish, and Arabic.
Is that right?
He's already speaking in the top 5 most spoken in the world, so he's already got Spanish, English, and Arabic.
Gosh.
So he's not doing bad, 3 out of 5.
He's doing brilliantly, and obviously he loves it. Happy holidays. Have a good one, Mo. Thank you. Andrew's in Watford. Andrew, what do languages mean to you? Are we a little complacent in England, in the United Kingdom? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Yes, we are tremendously complacent. One of the joys of my job as a lecturer in education is visiting schools overseas.
Mm.
And if you see the approach to learning languages, say, for example, in the Netherlands or in the United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia, Qatar, it's considerably more advanced than we are,
right,
in terms of it being compulsory. I think, unfortunately, we've got this sort of monolingual mindset in Britain, which doesn't allow for people to think about the benefits and the joys of speaking another language. I mean, my own children well, it's very difficult now because successive government policy over the last 10, 15 years has made learning languages not all that attractive in terms of the grading system is very tough on them, and people just don't see the point of it. Because everywhere they go, they hear English being spoken. But the reality in the world is that most people speak another language anyway.
They do, and that complacency has got to be beaten. Should we be doing more in our education, a sphere of education, when these children could be taking, let's just say, a GCSE course in French or whatever it might be?
Yes, I think there is a definite need to not only go down the traditional, you know, trio of French, German and Spanish. My granddaughter learned German at school, but there are other languages as well which do have support from various other sources which are equally valid, and as your previous caller said, you know, that the world's biggest languages are now things like Arabic. And that's quite useful. I mean, my wife and I are both Arabic speakers, which is...
And how did that come about?
Well, we worked in the Middle East for 20 years.
Ah, right, OK. Whereabouts?
It was from Sudan, Algeria, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia.
And did you have a working knowledge of Arabic, or you went in virtually knowing nothing and just had to effectively learn it?
No, I had to learn it from scratch.
Wow, congratulations. Great to have that language. Andrew, thank you. Abdi in Brixton. Abdi, your story. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. About 30-something years ago, I was working for the United Nations in Kenya.
Yes.
And I was very young.
Yes.
And I was working with a young Northern Ireland lady.
Northern Irish lady, yep.
Yeah. And I make a mistake of pronouncing maybe a word in the wrong way in English. And she told me, and I'm talking about the, you know, she told me, you don't say that word in a very, very rude way. And I just calmed down. I was 20-something years of age. And I said to her, you are in Kenya. You came all the way down here to work in Africa. But you make no attempt whatsoever to understand me. And I made an effort to learn your language, to accommodate you and be able to understand you. How about that? I mean, what difference did that make? And
right,
she respected me on that, and she promised she would learn another language from that day on. And I know she speaks another language now because we have been contacting ever since that morning until today. I know her, and I talked to her, and that lady, and she speaks another language now.
It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And the way that you've made sure that happened, you've really helped her. Abdi, thank you for your story. So many stories coming in on this, and coming up after news, we take a totally different turn. We're off to Norwich Market, where, as I said earlier, each afternoon at around 5, the hustle and bustle of the market is replaced by the sound of screams. But why? You'll have a full report after this. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Police in Australia have alleged the gunmen accused of last week's shooting at Bondi Beach carried out shooting practice days before the attack. Health experts are warning that the impact of the resident doctor's walkout in England will be felt into the new year and beyond. And the government is reportedly considering copying Australia to ban social media for under-16s. LBC weather, dry and bright for most, outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M2 eastbound is partly blocked because of an accident between Junction 5 for Sittingbourne and Junction 6 for Faversham, so there are queues. It's slow on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 24 for Potters Bar after an investigation earlier. It's stop-start on the South Circular Catford Bridge in both directions to Catford Station. That's because of some emergency repairs. On the trains, Southern and Gatwick Express are running a reduced service at Victoria because of festive timetable changes. Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hertford East after flooding. On the Tube, Colin
Ferndale station on the Northern line is closed in preparation for the opening of the new ticket hall early this afternoon, and there's disruption to a number of TfL bus routes in South West, West and North West London. That's because of a strike.
This is LBC.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Booking geniuses. Get free airport lounge access when you book a five-star holiday with On The Beach. Feet up, fill your boots. Una drink, por favor. On The Beach. Book it now.
Conditions apply. 7-night minimum stay. Outbound only from selected airports for up to 6 people. Subject to lounge availability. Abtur and Atoll protected.
On The Beach.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodwin.
West Treating suggests we might need to join a new customs union with the EU. Are the Brexit wars about to return? And Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, not a prince, but why could he still, in theory, be king?
Lewis Goodall at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
Waitrose presents... And the main event. Fantastic. One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dried cured beechwood smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak. Walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast. Plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Mind your language. We'll be back to the importance of language in just a moment. But we're off to Norwich. No, not for the pedestrianisation of the city centre for Alan Partridge fans, but rather we go to the market where each afternoon at around five, it is reported, the hustle and bustle of the market is replaced by the sound of screams in scenes reminiscent of Alfred Hitchcock's famous movie, The Birds. What lies behind it? We send LBC's hawkish reporter, Henry Riley, joins us now. Henry, what's the report? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this is one of the oldest open-air markets in Britain. 190 stalls, mostly food outlets. Its origins go back nearly 1,000 years, and yet this feather in Norfolk's cap is facing one of its toughest challenges yet. Pigeons, and specifically the resulting row between dovish animal rights activists and the hawkish local authority over feeding them. Now, Norwich City Council recently paid around £4,000 for a falconer and a Harris hawk as part of a trial to ruffle some feathers and scare the pigeons into roosting elsewhere. Local animal rights activists, though, say that the pigeons should be fed by locals. I spoke with two activists. First, you'll hear from Summer Lau, as well as Jenny Copeland from Peck Savers, who says there's no pecking order when it comes to birds.
By nature, they are dependent on humans and very friendly with us. Out in nature, pigeons would forage for seeds and plants, but in the city, they don't have very many natural sources of food, which makes them reliant on humans for food. Pigeons are so full of personality, and if you ever take the time to watch them, you will see how silly and charming they can be.
Those birds should be embraced as part of our urban life.
as they have been here for centuries. They brighten the lives of so many people, far more than the mean-minded and ignorant complainers who should remember that birds live, they exist, and they defecate outdoors. That's how birds work. And if you don't like that, don't have an outdoor business or eat your dinner where pigeons live.
Now, the three Harris hawks, Hazel, Harriet and Travis, won't be seen again anytime soon. They were scared off after the Labour Council said that selfish and irresponsible people, oh my goodness, were dumping commercial bird food on an industrial scale. They all sort of came at me. I don't think they liked the Labour Council.
Was it?
That was pigeons, yeah, wow. Flying at me, such as sacks of corn in the market to create havoc, and they were verbally abusing the falconer, it is reported. Now, in terms of the pigeons, there are around 400 of the old flappers who've made this marketplace their home in recent months. Locals are complaining that in some cases they're dive-bombed while trying to eat. And the issue has intensified after the demolition of a nearby shopping complex where that's where the pigeons used to reside, but most of them now have migrated to the market. Traders and locals have flocked to give me their opinions.
The stall holders is quite bad because they put the stuff out and they spend half the day going around clearing pigeon mess up off it. There's signs saying do not feed the pigeons, and people just throw half a carton of chips on the floor, you know, and there'll be seagulls, pigeons.
What do you think about them feeding them? You got a problem with it, or...?
It's misguided. Kindness is what it is. It's classic misguided kindness. It's like giving your child too many sweets because you love them and they end up bloated.
You do feel sorry for some of the... like the storeholders, like the phone man, bless him, Dow, and then when the pigeons are all over their clothes and their foam, it's not the easiest stuff to get out, is it? Like,
I mean, they'll eat some of our, you know, some of the things we sell.
What do they eat?
Cat grass, mainly.
Oh, really?
I understand why they're feeding them. You know, they're animals, why wouldn't they be fed? But the more that we feed them, the more they wouldn't go find the food that they should be eating, not chips and bacon rolls.
Now, Nick, Norwich City Council are looking into potential foul play and weighing up whether enforcement action, which could include fines or community protection orders, may well now be needed.
Now, you're playing a little music from the movie Where Eagles Dare. Henry Reilly, how familiar are you with the film Home Alone?
Yes, Pigeon Lady in Home Alone 2.
What do they sell in the market? Do they sell honey or treacle?
No, I can
do they
tell
sell
where
bread?
This is going.
Because how easy is it, or how dangerous is it, to cover yourself in treacle and breadcrumbs and have pigeons swoop down and feed on you? There's a bottle of very fine wine, if you have a go at that, for your Christmas table.
I'll consider it. If it's Pomerol, then you may be got me.
Yeah, maybe vintage. Well, I'll get you a bottle of Pomerol. Yeah, let me know how you get on. Henry Reilly, hawkish Henry Reilly, reporting from Norwich Market. Will he take on that challenge? There's only one way to find out. Tune in tomorrow. Is he a man of the birds? So we'll join us and we'll let us know tomorrow on that. Right, last couple of minutes, let's get back to the importance of languages. What are you saying here? Oh, Francaise. My son was employed for his first job while he was still at university because he spoke English, Italian and French. It's such positive reaction to this. Same subject. This comes in from Heather. The problem is the reigning degree paper bag brigade. I don't quite sure what that means. I suppose you mean some people... Well, it's the idea of what you want to get out of education, isn't it? And I do think languages unlock so many doors. Sarah's in Hitchin. What are you going to tell me, Sarah? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Basically, I just wanted to describe a little bit how I'm bringing my daughter up. So I lived in Spain for 10 years. So I speak fairly fluently, but not perfectly. So right. I have a bit of imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I moved back to the UK and I had a daughter and I speak to her in Spanish. So
good.
It's not my first language.
Right.
So she's a non-native bilingual, but she's nearly three and she speaks back to me in Spanish now and she talks in full sentences.
How wonderful. And why is that so important to you?
Because to me, languages are so important. I think they open so many doors. They make you think differently. Mm-hmm. They make you understand the world differently, the way people's perspectives are different.
Yep.
And I think that goes to the very core of understanding human nature. So it's not just about the language, it's about really being able to understand other people and how they tick and how we can respect different people and their different ways of being, in essence.
Do you want her to carry on with her Spanish all the way into adulthood?
I'd love that, yeah. So try and take her to Spain when I can. Keep speaking to her in Spanish. I've tried to build up a community of people who speak Spanish to support me, because I do have a bit of imposter syndrome, and she needs to make it needs to be relevant. There's no family for her, right? It needs to be relevant, and needs to be a reason to speak. But yeah, I think it's really important.
Well done with your daughter. Fantastic. I mean, age of three, putting whole sentences together. Fantastic. Sarah, thank you. Brian in Milton Keynes. It's German we're going to be talking about. Is that right? Brian, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yes, I went out to Germany in 1978 as a bricklayer, Alvida Zane Pet.
I remember that TV show. So you were part of the Alvida Zane Pet gang then, were you?
I was indeed, Nick. It was great, truly transformational. Got to know the culture, had to pick up the language. I think the bottom line is it's never too late to learn. It really gave me the spur to go on and do further education, if you like. It was a real confidence builder. But really got to know the culture of the people, broke down those barriers, worked with Turks, Yugoslavs. If I could just make one final point, Nick, we were accepted out there because we were needed, if you like.
Right.
They knew we needed. Now, I honestly think there's a similar situation over here. We need immigration. If people are saying, oh, let's get rid of them.
The difference being, Brian, of course, you went with a specific job to do. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas here, in many instances, people are arriving with absolutely no job nor skill.
Nick, that may be fair, but I think the general point is for every 100,000 that leave, it costs our economy so many billion. And that's just the general point. I was out there, I was welcomed, we were needed, I was productive. I think we took an overview of the people that come into this country, trying to help. You know, I think it'd be a bit more of a balanced debate.
Yep, I can hear what you're saying there. Do you still use your German, or what's the situation?
I do. I'm 70 now, but it's great if I'm on holiday. I can, if you like, understand conversations. You can say "Schön oder Lab" to somebody, and they look so surprised that, you know, there's a Brit that can, you know, if you like, speak a little bit. A lot of what we learned was you'd understand like Baustelle Deutsch, which is, you know, what you understand on the building site. But it migrates to, you know, you just build a confidence, Nick. And the key thing is never too late to learn. And it really is a big confidence boost.
Good luck to you, Brian. Thank you very much for that. I'm at the end of today's show. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. Put your news catches in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Lewis Goodall is here after the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Australian police have alleged the two men accused of carrying out the Bondi Beach shooting had weapons training days before the attack. Court documents also claim the pair recorded a video setting out what they called their justification for their actions. One gunman was shot dead by police. Another man is facing 15 murder charges. Premier of New South Wales, Chris Mims, says reforms to gun laws are being considered with urgency.
This legislative change will be met with opposition both on the floor of Parliament and in the community. I've heard members of the public say that we've gone too far, but I strongly believe these changes to law and legislation in New South Wales are fundamentally important to keep this state safe.
The Health Secretary Wes Streeting has been criticised after appearing to hint the UK should join a customs union with the EU. It's a suggestion which the Prime Minister recently ruled out. Political rivals have accused Mr Streeting of making a bid for the Labour leadership instead of focusing on the NHS. Speaking to Lewis Goodall on LBC yesterday, the Labour chair Anna Turley said there are no tensions within Cabinet.
Wes is a very talented guy and he's doing great stuff in the NHS.
Should he wind his neck in a little bit?
Well, look, the Prime Minister is a confident Prime Minister who knows that he's got lots of talent in the Cabinet around him. And I don't think he has a problem at all with people coming out.
Is that why his team briefed against him?
Well, the Prime Minister wasn't aware of that. And, I know that when he looks around the Cabinet table, he sees the team that he's chosen who are working with him. And he's, you know, working with them on their agenda.
Wes Streeting has previously denied on LBC leading a plot to oust Sir Keir Starmer.
A Russian general has been killed in an explosion in Moscow. Officials say it was a car bomb. Vanil Sararov was the head of operational training for the armed forces. Russian officials say they suspect Ukraine was behind it, but Kyiv hasn't commented. Resident doctors in England have returned to work this morning following their five-day strike over pay and jobs, but the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned that NHS services will take time to catch up. Ministers are reportedly considering following Australia in banning social media for under-16s. A government spokesman has told LBC that nothing's off the table, but any action will be based on robust evidence. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 47 at 98.50. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather dry and bright for most today. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you. It's Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien up to Christmas Eve this week here on LBC. The date is the 22nd of December, and although that means we are perilously close to the big day, there is still, curiously enough, thankfully enough, gracefully enough, perhaps, a lot of politics going on that we can discuss throughout the course of the next 3 hours. And there is an intriguing, almost crack, it feels to me right now, in the edifice that has been the Brexit settlement, the thing that Boris Johnson left with us back in 2019 for 6 years now. Since the general election, almost 6 years to the day, in fact. You remember the 19th of December 2019, that historic landslide win for Boris Johnson, which delivered him a majority of 80. Get Brexit done, he said, and as a result of that general election, he did get it done. Brexit, though, since then, in a political sense, has been put into something of cold storage. The Brexit wars, which characterised those years, I was covering it as a Sky News political correspondent at the time, internecine, day after day, parliamentary attrition, bit by bit, vote by vote, lobby by lobby, a nightmare for MPs, a political system which seemed that it could not digest the insolubility of Brexit itself. And the general election did clear that blockage. And as a result of that, Labour wanted it left alone. The Tories wanted it left alone. Even the Lib Dems wanted it left alone. And you'll remember they went into the 29 general election arguing for not just a cessation, not just a pause on Brexit, but the complete revocation of Article 50. God, even talking this language, it feels sort of conjures all that sort of time, or at least for me. Since then, it has been a slow, quiet truce. The intriguing thing for us this morning, and indeed for the politics to think about 2026, is whether that quiet truce, that uneasy stasis, is about to snap through the prism of an incoming, potentially incoming, Labour leadership election, no less. Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, who mysteriously enough, you may have noticed, has been out and about a little bit more than usual over the course of the last couple of weeks, got a lot to say for himself, did a almost Bowdoin catalogue-like interview, walking through the woods with The Observer over the course of the weekend. An interview with The Observer, he has said, among other things, "I'm really uncomfortable with the level of taxation in this country. The best way for us to get more growth into our economy is a deeper trading relationship with the EU. Now, that is being widely interpreted as a call for a new customs union with the EU, or at least a trading relationship which gets close to it. Because in the same interview, he also says that he would not accept a return to freedom of movement. You'll remember that means ruling out membership of the single market, because that inherently involves membership or being party to European freedom of movement. So if we want a closer relationship that is something short of single market, full regulatory alignment with the rules being set by Brussels, with the full sort of strictures of freedom of movement which come along with it, then basically it leads you inexorably, inevitably, to a shared customs union where it means we would not be able to do our own independent trade deals, or would have to do it in conjunction at least with the EU. This is something you will know that Keir Starmer has ruled out. It's something that Wes Streeting effectively ruled out when he stood on the Labour manifesto. So why is he saying it? He is saying it because he knows that it is highly, highly popular, not only with Labour voters in the country, but also, crucially, with Labour members. And it is, of course, Labour members that, if and when there is a leadership contest, will be voting for the next Prime Minister. And clearly, Wes Streeting, who has maybe some problems with some elements of the Labour membership, clearly working out the politics and moving there directly. Poll for the Times over the course of the last few days showing that a customs union has support of 80% of Labour members, never mind even Labour voters. It's even popular with 37% of Tory voters. So you can feel maybe the shifting sands of this politics. You heard Anna Turley, the chair of the Labour Party, in the news there talking to me on my Sunday show, saying that this is not going to be an issue given the Prime Minister has ruled it out. Tell that to Wes Streeting. It's also the issue of Brexit, because let's be honest, we know at this point now, we've got enough data. In the early years when we left, because we left on the 30th of January 2020, we didn't have the full leaving process till 2021, that inevitably co-joined with COVID and the inevitable economic damage. It was very hard to disaggregate between Brexit and COVID. But now COVID has passed, certainly economically speaking, although we're still living with the legacy in lots of ways. But nonetheless, we can see the damage of Brexit that is being incurred day after day, week after week. That is something that I put to the Shadow Policing Minister and Conservative MP for Stockton West, Matt Vickers, speaking to me yesterday on LBC. Would you accept that you damage free markets and growth in this country more than any government since the war?
No.
Well, in which case, what would you make of the fact that a very authoritative new paper with excellent pedigree, published by the America's National Bureau of Economic Research, very respected, written by economists from Stanford University, the Bank of England, King's College London, and the German Central Bank, and the University of Nottingham, say that the signature achievement of your last government, Brexit, has cost every single man, woman and child in this country £3,000 in terms of lost economic growth?
I'm sure that those people probably would have told you that was what was going to happen. Well, I mean, we heard the sky was going to fall.
They're all just woke.
Occurred.
They're all
but
just
the
woke,
reality is this
America's National Bureau of Economic Research. This, well, what skin in the game have they got?
This new publication I've never heard of. I'll tell you what the difference
is. Well, have you heard of
the Bank of England? Before the general election, we had the fastest growing economy in the G7. We've now got the slowest growth in the G7. In fact, the shrinkage. We've got the slowest growth in the G7. We had near record levels of employment.
You're saying that Brexit's been good for this country economically?
I think it's created opportunities. We've gone out there, we've set up trade agreements.
You're there having a go at Rachel Reeves for increased bureaucracy, of friction for business, of making life difficult for business. Have you ever tried being a small business exporting to Europe these days? It's a nightmare.
Let me take you out west, Minister. You can come up north, speak to some people who are creating jobs.
I'm talking about exporters, small businesses, people trying to send goods to Europe. It is so much harder than it used to be because of your government. You made life harder for business in this country.
However bad you might think it was going, I'm sure you thought it was terrible, you always did. But the reality is that 21%